10 second, put it right, part two.
Brad took a little dip in there.
Put this down here because you're hard to hear.
But very bold one jumped off.
Yes.
Okay, let's
off the other end of the catwalk.
Steve, can you grab the door, please?
Probably.
I checked it. There's somebody on the phone.
I'm on the phone.
Gotcha. Tripping hazard up here. Thanks for reassembling. Sorry it took us a little while to get going. What you have in front of you is the agenda for this afternoon. Kind of want to kick it off with an overview from the B2FGE team, and that team encompasses, I guess, two specific PDTs. One is Randy leads the technical lead for the FGE group, which encompasses kind of like the Gatewells portion of this talk, and then Karen Kuhn is the technical lead for the hydraulics portion of the orifice and the orifice lighting portion of the FGE. So we've kind of combined today's talk to let you know that both of these things are kind of like parallel tracking. I want to give Randy an opportunity to speak to the overview. George Medina, the PM, is not here today, but kind of give the floor to Randy for a second just to kind of talk about what we're going to go through today.
Well, in terms of B2FGE, say something.
Yeah.
Well, I'm number three.
I know. We're just going to kind of give it.
Now you're number one.
We've moved you around.
You're number one.
I would be careful when you say that.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, you know, as we've been looking at this issue, at least recently, last couple of years when we started seeing some increased mortality numbers in the Gatewell from Lyle Galbraith's work. And so we started looking at it in terms of how we would, what might be the issue in the Gatewell. Was it an issue in the Gatewell? Was it a flow? Is it a flow issue? Is this a mechanical issue or a structural issue that might be causing these higher mortality rates with the juvenile fish? So we started with out on an alternative report about a year and a half ago. We got a 30% report out to you. I think Dennis said he got that out, at least for the group, in an email. Kind of identified some of the alternatives that we were looking at the time, and that included opening up a second orifice in the Gatewell, some flow control devices that might include some louvers or some plates that would be on the backside of the VBS return flow openings, not in the VBS itself, but in the openings that flow returns to the turbine. We also looked at, in terms of the flow control, reduces the load on the unit. And because that, I think, according to Lyle, his testing procedures show that when they reduce the load and on the turbine from probably, I think it was from the upper 1% to the mid 1% range, which is about 15,000. They saw the survival numbers, or actually mortality numbers, reduced back to kind of.
And also to scaling with one of the factors.
Went back to kind of the numbers that they were most, I think, used to seeing, so kind of normal.
Kind of historical background.
Yeah, historical numbers. So where we are at the moment is we are doing some CFD modeling. We decided to do continuing a modeling program that looks at some of these alternatives, and we're using the CFD as a screening tool more than it is a design tool. We want to use the CFD to kind of weed out and look at alternatives that might be, that are promising to look at in further detail. Liza Roy is the hydraulic engineer who's doing the CFD work, so she'll be in here talking later about some of the findings that she has discovered during her modeling effort. So that's the agenda. That's kind of the, I think, the main focus of what we wanted to talk today is with some trends or some interesting things that you discovered. I think our initial, and I'll just give a quick tip off of that. We've always thought that, you know, the flow issue was, we were getting too much flow up the gate well, causing some hydraulic conditions that might not be favorable. During Mrs. Longley exercise, she found that there's increased turbulence with in her model versus what we saw when matched up against the physical model that we used to develop the prototypes, and that the physical model that we built did not have a lot of the details that she put in to the, she kind of developed her meshing and her structure based upon putting in gate slots and a lot more detail than what we did in the physical model. And she was seeing turbulence, a lot of turbulence develop as flow was coming up the gate well from the gate slots. So there'll be some illustrations showing that and what she has done to, in her CFD modeling. So that's something that was an assumption that might now be up in play. Is it this turbulence, increased turbulence versus this flow? So she'll talk a little bit about that. But in essence, we are, the alternative report is basically doing the CFD modeling and this is what we were like from the last time. I think we met 6-8 months ago.
Mm-hmm. That's been
a while. That has been.
Okay.
And where we are, and I think.
So there's your teaser.
There's your teaser.
All right, that's the hook to keep you coming back.
Money's a bar hook then.
Yeah. So the second part of this too is that we want a parallel track, and I think that folks wanted us to also not lose sight of other improvements that we could do to the DSM and that coming out of the gate wall environment. And that one of the major issues is the orifice condition of the jets, as well as piggybacking on some of the lighting stuff that we've done. And then from what we've done at McNary and bringing it back to Bonneville. So at this time, this is a good place to segue in. Karen's a technical lead for the orifice and lighting program group. We have several major players, and I don't know if some of you guys know some of the folks down at that end of the room, but you know the illustrious Dr. Schlenker. Mm-hmm. On the far left. You may not know some of the other team members down there. Why don't you introduce yourself real quick?
I'm Alan Stokey. I'm a mechanical engineer in the mechanical design section.
I'm Dennis Petros, structural engineer and structures.
And we also have Jim Kalman. He's on the group as well. And then we have an electrical.
Scott
McFarland as the electrical engineer. A lot of the lighting work Scott will be doing. Yeah, so,
okay. Y'all don't mind, I'm just going to sit. Standing will make me nervous. So I'm going to be...
We're a gentle crowd.
They just had lunch.
We had lunch. We've already been at each other's throats for the whole morning. Yeah, so
should be going.
Probably pretty well wore out.
Okay, good.
But
perfect. Good to plan better.
Wait till we talk about CFD. Where's my coffee yet? I need.
All right, so I'm going to. This is just an overview of what I plan to tell you in the next hour or two. The history of since 1982 of the orifices themselves. Just focusing on the orifices as opposed to the entire DSM. Where we are now, the letter report and our goals for that. The alternatives that we've come up with, and actually there's actually 4 categories now, but I forgot to change that one. And an alternative comparison the factors that we're considering for comparing the alternatives and the rankings, the relative rankings of those. And homework for you guys.
Yeah, it's all easy until you show up to a meeting.
Yeah, our demeanor just changed.
I said put that slide at the end.
Surliness is creeping in.
Well, this is should be obvious to you all, but we're focusing on, this is just a generic system, we're focusing on as the water leaves the gate well through the orifice into the transportation or collection channel and then out towards dewatering. And so we're just focusing on one area, trying not to, of course, exclude anything else that's going around, but not necessarily focus on that.
Yeah. Ignorant question number one, I guess. I'm lost with the operating gate. What does that do?
I took this from somewhere.
The operating gate?
Was that big thing hanging down in the gate?
Well, it's in the operating gate slot.
That's that's the upstream slot. That'll close off water.
Right.
In B2, you've got the operating gate, and then you have the head gate.
Okay.
And they both close off.
So you're just not showing the
head gate's
slot,
not in there.
Slot there. Okay.
Yeah. The operating gate is, if B2 is hydraulically hung.
It's the gate that's operating.
Yep.
Well, I'm just trying to...
Hydraulically,
it's different. B2 doesn't have gates, you know, that are hanging. I mean, B1, yeah. they're hanging there, but they have to be lifted and put down in place. So,
they're hydraulically as in oil hydraulics, not water hydraulics.
Okay.
Hold your question. Anytime anybody has a question, and/or team, if you want to add, you know.
You're doing great, Karen.
I'm stopped now.
I think you should stand up.
Okay.
Cool.
This is just a shot that's
everybody
rarely
else
seen
does.
with a dewatered structure that shows the orifice and what a fish would see. The of course, the hole on the right is one of the
light tubes.
There's one on each side. The length is about 2 feet. And that's what the when I talk about the orifice ring, it's that the silver ring with that's got the bolts that are in the concrete there.
So this is looking from the gate well.
Gate well, yeah.
Yeah. So,
is that 10 inches, 12 inches? What is that?
This one's 12 and 5/8.
Wow.
Just, yeah. Nice
round. Plus or minus 16.
Plus or minus 16. And at least I think so, depending on how old this
picture is.
Yeah. Photo is. Because it has shifted, it's changed throughout the years.
This looks like, Karen, this looks like one of the polyester ones that we put in at 99.
It is, in the ring.
It's
an
older one.
Didn't hold up.
No.
Okay.
Right
sorry,
now,
go on, Karen.
There should be a gap in there.
No.
This is an old picture.
Yeah, these are old.
Yeah,
these are old.
Because I think the current one does have an over, I mean, the ring is larger, smaller than the hole.
Oh, you mean the width of the...
There's a lip on it.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Well,
okay.
And they're steel.
Like
they're not. 16. They're not a composite anymore.
Yeah, right. They're steel.
But this is one of the few pictures I could find of. Well, this
is a hole.
This is one of those. This orifice system actually worked pretty good. Until we changed it.
Hold that thought.
Hold that thought. Okay.
Really,
okay.
Hold that thought.
And just an overview of the different. There's several different gate assemblies between 11 and 18, and the fish units. I'm just focusing on 1 through 18 at the moment, but this is one of the original gate assemblies, and some of these in the project, some of these have this carved out concrete, which puts them up a little closer to the wall, and some do not. And I do not know why they chose the ones they did. And that's if anybody has any historical reference for that would be useful. But,
well, apparently they knew more in 1982 than they did in 1999, and I was on the 1999 team, so
they there, this is the one. These are the gate assemblies that were added to the south orifices back in 1999. We added them to 11 through
14.
Because there's a north and south orifice. There's a north and south orifice hole, or... tube in each of the bays of each of the students.
Gable has them. Has two.
Either yes, so the machines have two. Right. And then, but they were all the south units were originally. Oh, this will come up in the historical perspective. But all the south units were originally just covered and in 99, we opened them up, and when we replaced the gate assembly, these were about approximately 4 inches larger. So it essentially made the length of the tube that the jet had to travel longer. And he's just showing one of these sealed south orifices. Because 15 through 18 were never opened up. So, history. Yes?
Could you go back to the previous picture?
Sure.
I just got lost because I don't know the details. You said that's a closed orifice.
They're blanked.
They don't have any gates.
Oh, for some reason I thought there was some kind of sliding gate there.
No. They're cored, but they're blanked.
Yeah, cored.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
That's what it was like. Sorry.
So back in 1982, there was 28 12-inch diameter orifice rings that operated with clean jets. What I mean is that you could actually see the jet come out without...
swirl.
Did it swirl?
Or they did not. They were clean.
Without filling the tube,
without a lot of splatter, without hitting
very
the sides.
Splattered and turbulent.
Yeah. And at that time, it was about, depending on bore bay, 9 to 12.5 CFS per. From what I understand from it's all, I don't say hearsay, but it was not written down, that it was very easy to determine if there was a problem with debris in
yeah.
the entrance
what you
because
saw
it was markedly different.
And originally, before the change, was that when the unit wasn't running, you saw a very clean orifice jet coming out into the collection channel. It was just circular.
Mm-hmm.
Unless there was debris, when the unit started, that would collapse a bit. So when the units were running, it was collapsed, but it was still pretty clean. You could look at it, if there were debris in it, you could tell. I mean, it'd be sputtering and doing all kinds of weird things. Today, you look at it, you see that condition. There's no debris in it. It's just sputtering. And a lot of times, if you hit the air backwash, it'll collapse it back down again, and it'll make a nice jet for a little while, but then it starts to sputter again. So, not just hearsay, I saw it.
And I did too.
I was there, 1985, 86, 87, 88.
Yep.
I saw the Missoula flood too.
You recall how it was before too, right?
Oh yeah, in the early 90s, it was the same way before we changed it.
Yep.
Same way.
Yeah, it looked good up until we changed it. It looked kind of tough to...
After 82 FGD studies were... it was found that there were some issues, potential issues, with the existing design, and I think that led to the DSM improvements of 1999, where Steve got involved, or even earlier than that, the whole design. But they added 12 more orifices for a total of 40, replaced the 12-inch orifice plates, the rings, with 13-inch to give more flow to the channel. They also modified the DSM collection channel, the control weir, the watering facility, all to improve channel and wall screen velocities, and it upped the overall total flow per orifice, again, depending on the forebay. That's why there's a range. And after the improvements, I think everyone would attest to, that if there was a different signature in the orifice jets, they were disturbed, it was near to impossible to determine if there was any kind of debris issues.
No, yes. Right? No, that's the problem.
And it was noticed that the south orifices, the ones that have the bigger drivers, they were striking the gate housing on the trajectory of the jet. That there was a lot of, that's what appeared to be.
Mm-hmm.
At least at lower forebays.
Right. Especially on lower forebays, thank you.
When head drops, the jet sags.
It does sag, yep. Yeah, it doesn't have as much pressure.
And there was also too much flow in for DSM criteria at that point in time. So in 2000, between 2000 and 2002, they replaced the 13 inches with a smaller orifice to assist with reducing the flow, but it did not impact the jets. The jets were still disturbed. In 2006, Steve and Randy went out to the field to do a test to try and determine if more air were allowed between the jet and the outer tube, that would clean up the jet. or at least make it better. And so they looked at different orifice ring sizes and compared north and south orifices as well. And I think I already told you about the south orifices are different. The recommendation from that study was that we should increase the tube size, the outer tube, 17.75 inches instead of 15, and increase the ring diameter back to 13, the 1999 design, and in theory that would allow the correct flow as it was designed. This is just a comparison of the two different diameters, or two of the different diameters, both on the north orifice for better comparison. And you can see the 11 inch was where you see that more green, smooth. That's a little bit better. These are not the best pictures, but it's hard to get in down in there. This is a comparison of north versus south, and you can really see on the blue, the south side, how much more disturbed it is. And then this year, we went out as a team, our PDT, and saw something very similar, 11A, north orifice versus south orifice. There was markedly different, obviously the north is better.
Yeah, the difference too between these two orifice types is 11A is stuck up against the wall. 11, the south orifice of 11A sits off the wall about 7 or 8 inches.
And this was also, just today, we got some info from Ben Hausman. He kind of did a assessment of which orifices performed better based on his experience, and by far the south orifices were always bad. The north orifices, especially the ones that were chipped into the concrete, were always good. And then the ones, the north orifices that were not chipped into the concrete and further in were sometimes good, sometimes bad, and more so on the upstream end. So for what it's worth, that was his observations.
Perform better in terms
upstream
of
upstream end of the
condition of the jet
stays, yeah, it's tight and clean.
So he's got a pattern. Okay, that's
yeah,
good.
He went through and started developing a pattern of south versus north from one end of the powerhouse to the other, looking at and what type of driver you've got, how far the driver sits off the wall.
Good.
So, and some of our initial stuff that we looked at was that as these drivers that sit farther off the wall, and the team can kind of attest to it, because we looked at several different ones, is as they sit farther from the wall, the jet has a greater chance to expand before it gets to the back of the driver. And so it's expanding before it gets to the back of the driver, hitting the back of the housing. And then coming through, and then it's disturbed.
And okay, also the jet has got a trajectory, so the further out, further X direction you have, the more drop you're going to have.
Right, so the chance of it striking the bottom of the driver.
Yeah.
Okay.
I hate to ask again. I'm totally lost with this driver thing. What is this doing? I can't get a picture of what this is.
The drivers are the drivers that sit on the backside that control the orifice, whether it's open or closed.
Yeah, there's a gate, orifice gate,
opens or closes the gate inside the DSM.
So the water's
coming through the wall into the DSM this
right.
way.
Right.
So that thing is a pneumatic. It's an air cylinder.
It's coming this way. This is the channel.
The channel's down below you. Right. There's a driver with a shaft on it. It opens and closes the orifice that's coming through the wall from the gate well.
So why is the water hitting that when it comes through?
So these blue drivers sit off the wall. They're not flush with the wall. They stick out from the wall about 7 or 8 inches.
Yeah,
this
distance here.
The older type style drivers are much closer.
Chipped in, yeah.
Yeah, are chipped in. Okay, so they're more flush with
right.
the wall. So as the water exits the orifice right at the wall, it starts to expand unless it's tight. So the farther it's out, the more distance it has to start to expand. And so what we're thinking is the drivers that are sitting farther off the wall, because the water is able to expand, it's striking it. And then at lower forebays, you've got less head on the orifice, which you don't have as much energy in the jet sags.
Right, there's less velocity coming from the jet in the jet as a function of lower forebay. Therefore, the trajectory doesn't reach out as far.
So the driver is that cylinder?
Yeah. The driver is that housing, and then it's connected to a shaft that's connected to a gate. And so it's in a closed position, it closes off the orifice. When it's up, it's supposed to be up, cleared, and lets the water pour out the walls.
The opening should be below that thing, right?
It is. It is below the wall.
So just these doesn't
have a smaller area.
This is below, and it's kind of a funky angle. It's, imagine that you're standing on that walkway, mm-hmm. and you're looking down, in this case, to the left of the gate. So there's the orifice. The gate is actually this way.
Yeah, it goes up and down like this.
Oh,
this is a side view.
It's, side view.
It's just a knife
kind of looking down. It's a knife gate. It just knife opens and closes the pipe.
All right.
That would have helped. Sorry. So the actuator, or the driver
okay.
up here.
Yeah. Okay.
Shutting.
Have you not been in DSM-2, Gary?
Mm-hmm. Have I not been in DSM-2?
No, I'm talking about Dave.
Yeah, he's been in there with once, you. He and I have gone and walked down that thing.
I was in there once, but yeah. I just don't remember what I was looking at.
My neck. I heard the next trip will be next Friday.
Hey, maybe this helps. I don't know.
You can hear it. Yeah, I remember that.
That's a good one. And
this is the orifice here, and this is the gate well. This is the collection channel, and this is what Karen's been referring to as the driver here. And you can see that, and this has a gate here which will close off, and this all just charges up. So the orifice is on one end of the tube. What is this, 2 feet, Karen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
2 feet. And I don't know what this distance is. Maybe you know, but.
It's about 6 or 7 inches.
On the blue drivers, it's seven to eight inches.
Okay.
On the older drivers, it's almost flush.
The other one is chipped in, so it's more like that.
Chipped
right?
in, it's flush. The other one's like 2 or 3 inches off.
The chipped in thing's weird.
But maybe that helps a little bit to visualize it. What's going on? So the orifice is on one side of the wall where the gate well is, and then the driver and the gate housing is on the other side, and the jet's got to clear that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Next Friday. See you out there at 7. Am I kidding?
Let's see.
This Friday or?
Next Friday.
Okay. So did I get it? Yeah. It's all there. All right. So about 2008, a study was started to look at these improvements, and their recommendation was to use. Their recommendation was to use the 2006 recommendation, which is to increase the tube size and increase the tube size to allow extra air to modify the jet to make it more use to make it better. And it was also determined if you're going to recore, then you're going to influence the current lighting attraction design. So you have to do something about that. Same time or within a year, Peter and Al did a study on existing light through the existing tubes, and found that they produced light levels that were below effective minimum luminance values noted in literature.
It's less than one candle power.
Tiny.
Measured at the gate well. So
you guys never cleaned your tubes.
You didn't clean your glass.
Even with clean tubes.
Even with clean tubes.
And even using all sorts of different kinds of...
It was horrible. I mean, you might as well not even have a light on. That's, nobody's home.
Tom Bodan was talking.
That's right. Tom Bodan had to leave the light on.
For the fish.
All right. So around about that time then, the current thought was also to not only record, but it was also to look at different light source or like the lighting idea. Which is basically just having the lights embedded in something along in the front of the orifice, right close to the gate well, much better.
Self-cleaning.
Yeah, self-cleaning. let's see.
So this is the McNary lighting study.
Yeah.
Most of you are aware, in 2010, we built a prototype and tested it up in a pit trap, up in a gate well at McNary. So this is just a quick overview for some of you. We pit tagged and released fish in the gate well to look if we increased OPE by varying different lighting levels with the use of this orifice light ring. Again, in a nutshell, we found that we increased OPE on several different species over a range of our spring test, and majority of it was we were at the higher end of what of our lux range was about 350 lux where we tested. And passage benefits, we saw a benefit to all species, but it was greater for sockeye and chinook. And then there's also a question about, do we vary the light levels as turbidity? We built in a system where we didn't, we just stuck with the same light level throughout the whole season. Didn't matter what turbidity was. We had good effect. So anyway, that was for the, so that light ring worked well at McNary.
When was it tested? Last year?
2010.
And through the whole season?
All the way up through summer.
Okay. Was that with a closed gable?
Closed
cover on it?
No. Nope.
So the sun was day, night,
everything. Yeah, moon, lights, whatever.
There was thought about that.
There was thought about if we did a second year of testing, we would cover the gate well, and we would take the sunlight out of the equation, whether or not that would improve anything. But right. People
but
felt
you
that
can't
there was
look at the gate well and see if it's to recover.
Right. You can, but you'd have to modify a system to
periscope.
Almost like a pool cover or whatever you want to do.
Oh, yeah.
So OPU was better.
OPU was better.
What about Andy and MP?
They were good, too.
Okay.
All right.
Make sure that's on tape.
Okay.
Wanted to
just jumped on this morning.
Give you an idea of what it looked like to what we were testing.
So these are the two different types. This was the light ring in the lab. That was just the prototype light ring. And then what we do is we inserted it into a housing that allowed us to slide it in and down a track. So we physically could remove it without unwatering the gate well.
That's the track, and it just slid up and down this track into go in front of the orifice.
Now, hydraulically, the fact that that's not flush with the wall, did that make any difference with how the water enters? And
yes, it does.
It would influence it. We tried to make it as smooth as possible for this test. Okay. We expect that the permanent design would not look like this.
Right.
This was just
test. Well, right. But is it? Okay, so
it will, and we want it to be as smooth.
It would increase the turbulence of the jet for one thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can see the device we used to slide it down,
exactly.
And it's a little hard to see here, but I was amazed that standing up on the deck, you could see, and this is see how that hosed the conduit for the electrical wiring. Mm-hmm. So imagine you're looking into the corner, and the electrical wiring is going up here. This is the top of the surface. That's the glow from the orifice.
Okay. You could see the glow even during midday, but you could also see the glow so much where you could see the fish that were moving in front of it. Okay. So it was amazing.
Wow.
It didn't take much to illuminate. You know, when you have zero going from nothing to something. And just as a byproduct, McNary has even worse lighting conditions that we have at Bonneville. I mean, you know, it's a piece of plexiglass on the JBS side with a light hanging over a bulb, you know. I mean, it's even
actually that light's on the back
way
side of
back
it.
Over here. I mean,
freaking
so McNary went from, you know,
that's right.
Dark to night, you know, with this system. So I'm trying to get McNary to bite. But that's as a side note. But anyway, you can see the lights on the deck. So.
Yeah, McNary bites.
McNary bites.
So
he's on the band. Walla District.
Nope.
So, that's just this last year. No, well, I guess, last year is when we kind of re-upped the letter board again, and that's when we started with McNary testing.
Mm-hmm.
And for this year, what our objectives for the letter report are to determine the purpose and scope of the work, find the problem, design criteria, suggest reasonable alternatives, come up with an evaluation criteria and rank them by importance, and select the best alternative based on the evaluation criteria, and then provide a design for the chosen alternative. And this would eventually then go on to plans and specs for detailed design. So our scope for the letter report is to identify and recommend modifications to the DSM gate well orifice, vent tube, and gate assembly to provide hydraulically and biologically acceptable passage to the DSM channel as part of the overall operation of the DSM. Okay, makes sense. All good. No, one more, yes?
The vent tube, I assume that's letting air in there to maintain a clean flow? Or what is the vent tube?
Yeah, I guess I meant the light tube.
I don't know of any vent.
You do not have a vent tube.
No,
I don't know why I wrote vent, but it's the light tube.
Okay.
We're thinking of using it as a vent later on. That's probably why.
The vent that we have a vent tube.
Okay.
Yeah.
And the problem statement then is that the existing orifices operate as disturbed jets, preventing the ability to detect debris blockage. And we know that that's harmful to fish, I understand. As well as the lighting study at Bonneville indicated that the current lighting infection is less than ideal. So in terms of design criteria in general, we want to provide safe passage for a range of port bay elevations. And we also want to maintain the operation and all the hydraulic criteria that's associated with the DSM system.
It should be pointed out that the 71.5, 76.5 is like, I don't know, 95 to 98% of the time. The DSM was designed to that range. The full operational range, as probably most of you know, is from 70 to 77.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I assumed that we'd be using the same
range,
but I would entertain any ideas less or more if that were. But on the assumption that that's the way it was built.
Looking at Tammy here, she's our expert.
We're designing to 95 to 98%.
I can't remember what that percentage was.
I just can't believe I was called an expert.
You are.
I know, I'm shocked.
Wow.
Okay, I'll look at Dennis. I'd rather not.
I mean, we designed the system to the 95% criteria.
That's fine, yeah. I just didn't know if there was anything changed, where this is good, and you're good with this. Nothing's changed out there. Not that I know of, but.
No.
Sorry, Dennis, I forgot you were ops chief.
So, our alternatives kind of fit into different categories. I've kind of expanded them since our team met, so they might be a little surprised. But anyway.
Surprise!
So, category one type of alternatives basically address the need for air and supplying that air demand so that the jets not start and potentially breaking apart sooner than necessary. Category two are providing alternatives to monitoring the system or for debris without necessarily having to observe the jet downstream. Category three is providing relief for the jet impingement. Especially during the low port bay elevations when we see a lot more of the impacts. The category four is addressing the insufficient light attraction, and it would be in conjunction with all the other categories. And it's not to say that an alternative may have multiple aspects of the final alternative. It could have all three pieces in it, or at least or two. Category one, one of the alternatives that we looked at were adding compressed air to the jet and then, again, sticking with a 13-inch diameter orifice. The other was to use the orifice tubes event. And if you want any details, kind of how we pictured it or how it might work, my team would be glad to answer and entertain any questions. My team. The team. Sorry. Got a little possessive there. Alternative 1-3. This was the 2006 recommendation, which was recoring in a larger size and then keeping the orifices at 13-inch to get the right flow and allow enough air and space for the jet to be as clean as possible for as long as possible. And another alternative was looking into reducing the orifices to a smaller size, say 12 or less, and adding additional orifices. So we'd have more flexibility with multiple orifices.
Additional orifices and additional gate wells.
Right.
Or adding additional orifices in the same gate well.
Adding additional orifices in the same gatewell.
In the same gatewell.
You know, popping another one open. So ones that have one, add two.
Okay, right.
Yep.
But you're talking, okay, but reducing these would be in the gatewells that already have two, possibly. Could affect FGE. That's all I'm worried about. Did you get smaller?
Wait, what's the name?
I don't know which ones you're talking about.
From a 13 to a 12 inch?
Yeah, which ones are those?
All of them.
Yeah.
Go from a 13 to a 12.
In any particular gatewell, then what you're talking about doing is reducing the size of the orifices.
Right.
It may add some down here, but for this gatewell up at the upper end,
right. Instead of a 5,
11 through 14, it could be smaller, which could affect.
That could be an alternative.
Sorry.
There could be an alternative. I mean, you're talking about two different things. One is you stay with the existing that is currently in there with that have. And then anything we add, we're proposing, or anything, I guess there's three alternatives. One is you go back and you add 12-inch to everything. So you go from a 12 and 5/8 to a 12-inch. And then your alternative was to keep everything in as a 13 or the 12 and 5/8. And then anything new we add could be 12.
Yeah, I'm not adding an alternative. I'm just saying that there's potential detriment to reducing orifice size. That's all. You get more debris, you could have more.
You could have more debris.
So,
but we had 12-inch orifice before.
Right.
Maybe two.
Okay. And so, I mean, we're trying
to. We had debris problems.
Well, we have to.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, and, yeah. But we didn't have a system that back flushed, and we didn't have.
No, we added all that stuff. Yeah, but I don't like relying on that.
Okay. But anyway, this is all, you know, these are. We want to talk about the alternatives, we want to talk about the pros and cons of these alternatives, and so issues associated with debris and things like that.
I just saved my rocks until a little bit later.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Yeah. So part of this, and I want to make sure that this is pointed out as the first bullet, I guess the second little bullet there, first little bullet, modification of screen criteria. So. If we add additional orifices at 12 inches, okay, we're putting more water into the DSM.
Right.
Part of that is how do you handle that extra water? Okay, and the discussion needs to be had about this alternative.
That pre-AWS?
Huh? Yeah. Well, you either expand screen size, okay, or there's an additional option to where as we transition out of fry, times when fry arrive and a lot more fingerlings arrive, I looked at the DSM Fish Passage Center numbers for fry. When fry fall off? When do we have 95% of fry have passed Bonneville? And that's about the second week of May. So up till mid-May, we could maintain fry criteria. Anything after May, we could switch to a higher fingerling criteria. Or what it means is you could put more flow through the screens, which means your flow-through criteria could change. Dr. Schlinker says you could lower the weirs, which means you could pull more water through those screens.
With some caveats.
Right.
Existing weirs now, some of them are already, if you lower them, it doesn't matter because the well that they're discharging into or the sumps submerge and it's more, acting more like an orifice rather than a weir. So we have to do something to open that up. The other thing is we'd only want to. You know how, I don't remember, I'll draw another picture here. Plan view of the dewatering system is like a Y. Mm-hmm. You and Ed Meyer know well because you helped with the design. And so you've got these wall screens along here, flow is going this way, and then you have this straight section here. And in the straight section, here's another view. So this is profile view. You're going to have to use your imagination. So what happens is, and then here's the flume. Flow's going this way. This is plan. This is profile. And in this section, you have very large, uniform-sized screens. So ideally, if you're going to take out more flow, you change these. But you don't mess with this because these have different size screens here, and we have to take this out uniformly, otherwise our velocity profile gets really ugly from here to here. So, but talked to Randy and Dennis and Karen about is, we can look at, taking out more flow here, but we wouldn't want to mess with this part.
And that includes maybe even adding additional floor screens to be able to pull more water out.
Let's go with another idea.
We do have one little floor screen in there.
There's one little floor screen.
There's floor screens, and I know. That's
one. Yeah, I know that was a concession from your part.
What's your next idea?
And the ERG. We're not talking a lot of water, but the ERG, gate itself, mm-hmm. right now that's just a solid, bulkhead.
Yep.
You could turn that into a, there's, could be opportunity to turn that into a panel. Pull water through that.
Good. You'd have to have your retain the ERG functioning.
Right. Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. Okay. So what that means is discussing whether or not if this alternative, if we want to move it forward or if we wanted to analyze it, would we be able to relax fry criteria to a fingerling criteria mid-season once we know that, fry have passed, so we can pull more water through those and open up more orifices when the bulk of the juvenile fish are showing up in the system.
Okay.
So what this alternative allows us to do is, and it feeds into the B2 FGE stuff that, when Lyle opened up two orifices right. in the gate well, we saw fish vacating a lot quicker, and we got back to our normative condition with two orifices open compared to one orifice open. So if we can control the flow and have two orifices open, this is where this alternative comes from.
Yeah, but doesn't the 12-inch orifice still have the disturbed jet?
Well, the idea was to have there'd be more space between.
Yeah, but didn't you go back in and test that? I mean, you went down to 11-inch orifices in there, 11-inch plate in there, and you still got disturbed jet.
Disturbance, that's true.
2 years ago.
It depended on which.
But that's less than.
Depending on which, whether it was north or south.
But you haven't solved the problem.
Well, but what I guess the other thing that. And I think we've got to think also is I think that the disturbed jet issue. I think everybody thinks that it may be the air pocket. I think we need to think a little bit more likely towards that it could be because of the driver and where the water's expanding at the driver and hitting the driver. And so we want to investigate that a little bit more.
I'd take it one step beyond that. I think it's out in the gate. I think it's approached the orifices. I think it's flow approaching the orifices and is probably doing a swirl.
Right. In front of the orifices.
In front of the orifices.
Right.
That have we looked at anything like that, Steve?
Not to my knowledge. But what you could be talking about is if we put the orifice on and it sticks out from the wall. I think the original design it was more like embedded, but then when we went to the different orifices, I think they kind of stick out from the wall like that.
Yep.
And so it's very possible that mm-hmm. I agree that it could be a problem that this offset here could create more turbulence.
Yes. And it's a sharp edge. It's not contoured. It's not rounded coming into that.
It might be minimally rounded if anything.
But yeah, it all depends what you want that orifice to do. Is to contract and spring free and clear, because I'll tell you what, when you see that disturbed, as I remember, when we used to have it there, that was a solid jet all the way out, mm-hmm. and now you look at it through the light tubes and whatnot, and it's disturbed. It's not even. I guess there's a partial time when it comes out and it's clean,
yeah,
a little bit, but there's a lot of time when it is. Just coming out of that jet and expanding right there. And the only thing, if it comes out undisturbed, that jet should actually contract because it's going to start accelerating to gravity and it's going to start pulling in tighter, not expanding out. The only thing I can think that would expand it out is getting some sort of swirl into that.
But also the fact that we're so close to the edge here that there's no easy way for the air to get up in here.
Exactly.
You get a negative pressure in there. That helps it expand.
Pulling
plus the turbulence of the air air is being drugged along the surface of the jet, and at the same time, it's supposed to be trying to get up there. So the closer that, the narrower that space is, the greater the air turbulence you're going to have, which then contributes to this turbulence as well.
Yeah, but we cored those out to, what, 16 inches in diameter, and we're using a 12-inch jet? Didn't we core those out?
They weren't cored out.
That was the mistake we made back in 99. We didn't core anything out. We just used the existing tubes.
Mm. Yeah, so it's tighter.
Well, so there's very little difference between the orifice edge and the inside wall of the tube.
I guess
compared to what there was before 1999.
What supports that is that if you backflush air in there, the jet does contract.
Temporarily clean up.
Yeah, it cleans up for a little while, and then it goes back.
Right. I mean, in theory, you're right that the jet should get smaller because you've got a gravitational velocity that's accelerating as you go further out. But then there's also the fact that you've got a lower pressure around here than if you had a bigger core or better air coming in to keep this air pressure up. Otherwise, it's kind of pulling it apart. And then at the same time, the fact that the air is trying to go up in here and it's also being drugged along the surface of the jet makes for more air turbulence inside. If you have a smaller gap there.
Is there anything to say that the gate well hydraulic, or the water passing the surface of the orifice, so whatever's in train or being pulled into the orifice, if that's more turbulent, or will that cause to be set up to be disturbed even before it gets entrained into the orifice? So does the gate well environment or the water that's passing past the orifice have anything to do with
it? One of you talked about how if you have a unit on versus not, there's a huge difference, no doubt.
Yes.
And then, I do believe Ed's right about, the fact that back in the 80s, you look at the drawings and the way they had the orifice, it was bolted in and flush with the wall, and then because we couldn't use that same bolting procedure because we were going to have a bigger orifice opening area, we had to basically attach it to the outside of the wall.
Right.
So now we have an offset there, just not too far away from the orifice opening, and that would add to some turbulence.
Okay. Well, I think the other thing that, and when we get to Liz's talk, we'll talk a little bit about turbulence in the gate well and how that might influence how the orifices are operating now too.
I want to point out too that we talked about this friction between the air trying to get back up into the orifice, and Steve and I we've had conversations about this, and Gary, you're right when you for some of the orifices, when you apply high pressure air, the jet cleans up temporarily. That's
not
true
all
for,
of them,
that, yeah. But it's not true for all of them.
You're right.
And so, again, I think Dennis already pointed out that we don't want to focus on one way to fix these, because I don't think there is one way in specifically one way to fix these jets. It's going to be a kind of a multifaceted approach, and it does depend on whether or not you're in the north side of the core bay or if you're on the south side. So, and it also depends on whether or not the unit's running. So there are more issues to this than just air demand and whether or not, even if the jet is hitting the slot. So I just want to point out that it's not just one thing that we're looking at, and not one way to fix this jet problem.
What does seem apparent to me is that if we record these, and the orifice ring was set into the wall like it was, we would be back to where we were in the past, only with some what higher flow.
Right.
Why isn't that the one-stop fix?
Well, there is an alternative. I mean, we've talked to the team about when we recore, when we do recore, if we're going to put in an orifice light ring,
right,
everything would want to be flush with the wall.
Right.
So you cut out a bigger core,
right,
the whole face would be
flush, LEDs in,
and there would be the orifice ring, and then and the light ring on the outside. Everything would be flush
with the gate well.
Everything would be flush
Basically, that's 1.3, isn't it?
It just seems like that's the easy, it's not easy, but I mean, it's...
Yeah, that's 1.3.
Yeah. Well, the 1.3 talks about coring all the way through. Okay. There's, Gary, you're talking about an alternative. Alternative 3 talks about re-coring the whole thing. Right. So you have a bigger air jet, okay? If you think that, I mean, if you think we don't need that, or you could try to just re-core and then inset your orifice ring.
Right.
Okay, and test that.
Kind of get back to where we were before.
Yeah. You're flat.
Before we modified this thing. That's kind of, except it's a larger, overall larger, but because you're adding.
I think with all
keep the same flow that we have
to
today.
Do something with those gates. It's, you know, the gates that are sticking out too far as well. I think that needs, that would have to be a part of it.
Doesn't address the impingement of the jet on the housing.
Well, yeah, if you went with that, you'd have to include that.
Because of its larger diameter now?
No, because the farther the driver's away from the wall.
The newer drivers.
Yeah, we're seeing an issue with jet sag.
What's the story with those being cut into the walls? I mean, that seems odd to me. I mean, what happened there?
Anybody know
what that is?
No,
it's always been that way.
We're trying to figure out why some of them were chiseled in, some of them mounted flesh with the wall.
Is that an oops?
It's all the same dimensions.
The new drivers, I can tell you from the reason in design is because, you know, we narrowed the channel, you know, and then it gets wider and wider as we get closer. Well, down there by 11 and 12, the channel's very narrow.
Yeah, I know.
So those drivers have to sit way off the wall.
I know the history of that one.
Yeah. So those new drivers have to sit farther off the wall just because the width of the channel.
I guess it's, you know, can you... if you need to set them in closer, can we just chisel out some space to do that? And the channel itself is going to be a problem, too. But
I don't see any reason why you couldn't.
Yeah, it just seems like that's the least... Maybe it's a costly approach, but it's the least risk.
Well, and I think, you know, we always try to look for alternatives that are the most least, I guess, invasive.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you could test a flush-mounted orifice ring fairly easy. You know, in a gate well, and see whether or not it clears it up, or and if you do you have enough air to still feed the jet?
That should be an easy thing to do during indoor maintenance. You just go in there.
You have to core out a bigger
core it out
and design
whatever
ring.
You know, it's deeper.
So the critical distance is the space between the model is the edge of the ring and the edge of the
why
core.
Not.
Yeah. The rings that are sitting outside the wall, they're not flush.
No, right.
Is what some of the hydraulics folks are thinking is disturbing the jet.
But if you push it in flush, you still need the distance between.
Because I don't know how you're going to get the air water interface in the CFD model.
Oh, inside. So
it has the core. So that's your airspace, right? Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could model this full size if you wanted to. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, that's what we're doing right now.
I know, but I mean, but you can play around with it, tear it apart without having to worry about fish season and all that. That's what I'm saying. I mean, if you take it off site, make it out of plexiglass, there's a whole lot of stuff you can do with
I mean,
that.
You know,
so half scale.
I think what you could do is you could core out several different, you know, stick in a case on, core out one area, put in a flush ring, you know, you could try a couple different sizes to see if making it flush clears it up, or does it help? You know,
with the model you have.
What we want to do, we don't want to move forward with saying, "Oh, you've got to have the air jet. We're going to core these big puppies out." I mean, that's an expensive alternative. I mean, that doesn't mean that isn't going to be the alternative that maybe comes to the top ultimately. But of course, we want to look at less invasive alternatives.
Well, you already have an air. Nerve vents. That's the light tube.
Yeah. And see, that's the other thing we tested out there is we said, okay, if we can open up, you know, we were able to clear the system out to where we could pull both glass lenses off.
Right.
Which means it had full access to feed the jet as much air as it wanted.
Yeah.
We pulled them off and it didn't change the amount of jet that, you know, so if the jet was truly hungry, I mean, what the hydraulics engineers are saying, if it needs more air to clean itself up, it had everything it needed to do that.
I'm not sure it had everything.
Well, maybe not.
Well, it was also a lower forebay, which is probably...
It was a lower forebay that day.
Or a trajectory problem.
We thought it would, you know, really suck a lot of air.
Yeah, that was more of a low forebay issue at the time you...
It didn't.
This really begs for a model. Because that's something you can play with us that day. Well, you don't have to worry about that day if you have something. Like plexiglass, half scale.
How'd you unplug those light tubes and run that Orpheus without...
I had to get an operator to hang a clearance on the driver.
I was going
to
say, because if you shut that driver, it's still...
I had to put a clearance on it.
Okay.
I had to have an operator come put a clearance on it. That was a little harder than, you know.
Oh, I'm sure. Well, I'm just saying, if you had
a phone call.
Model that you can play around with all you want. Don't worry about that stuff.
That's true.
Okay. There's no fish bassin season to worry about.
Okay. All right, Karen, let's keep moving.
Okay. Category two, it's alternative methods for debris modeling. All relate to using the gate well area and adding cameras or pressure sensors across the orifice openings, or sonic or acoustic sensors that could be tied into the powerhouse, the regulators.
Been down this road once before.
Did we do that at B1?
Yeah, dock here.
What was it? What technology?
Orifice rings. It was pressure sensor. Rings on the orifices that supposedly when debris hit,
now, this
plugged
is,
it would send a signal and we'd get, but you know, they failed.
This alternative is on the other side. I think my understanding is on this one that what you do is you'd have a pressurized tube. So you'd have a pipe coming out of the wall and it would turn as an elbow. Okay, you wouldn't be able to look back up the jet itself to see if something's clogged on the orifice side. But you'd have a pressure sensor that was telling you that you've got a drop in pressure coming through your tube that's indicating a blockage. Is it, am I?
It would be in conjunction with other alternatives.
No, actually, as I understood in that meeting, that pressure sensor was a, contact pressure sensor.
With the orifice ring?
With the orifice ring. That's how I understood it in the meeting. But
okay.
Dennis, that's a good idea.
Been there, done
well,
that.
No, I, yeah.
This way, you wouldn't need to. You wouldn't be as concerned about a disturbed jet. You just wanted to monitor debris. So this particular category of alternatives does not.
What this? Yeah.
Gotcha.
Is not related to the other things. It's just.
Right.
Yeah, and this what this does. This keeps the jet inside of a tube, so it doesn't have time to expand before it gets dumped in the channel.
It's basically existing conditions with
no tubes.
With a debris
sensor. Oh, okay.
This could be used in conjunction with the other alternatives. Sort of why it
didn't work.
Like the next one.
Okay. Hmm? And that's good.
Didn't
to know.
Work.
And
it
didn't work.
We tried it.
B1.
Bonneville. Didn't work.
Powerhouse 1.
How many years? A long
2.
Time ago.
2.2 didn't work, right?
Well, it was.
Yes.
The 2.2.
Yeah. But the problem was it was electrical contacts and all the stuff underwater that just failed. Kept failing. Failed and finally
yanked
them out and went away from it. That was in the, I don't know when that was, 80s?
Yeah, it was
90s.
90s.
There we go. Scott here to answer whether the technology be any better now.
Yeah.
I think the deal was you got a lot of electrical contacts underwater and they shorted eventually. Just maintenance issues.
And the trouble, I would say the trouble with cameras in the gate wells, we're always yarding out VBSs and everything else, so you're going to... I get the cameras about 3 months before we shear them off.
Yep.
Any other acoustics, I mean, it's a rough environment there.
It'd have to be something you put it down every time you wanted to look. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's not your problem.
Nobody wants to do that.
It won't happen.
Okay.
Tammy can tell you that.
Let's keep moving along.
Okay. Category three, reducing the jet impingement. Focusing on that only. One concept was to support the jet. You know, either just at the bottom so that it comes out straight and doesn't have a trajectory at all because it goes all the way to the end. Mm-hmm. Or having,
trough.
And this is some sort of insert that's probably rounded and smooths out and perhaps increases in diameter when it goes downstream. It could be fully supported and have it actually end up being a full flow, like more of a pipe.
not open channel. The bottom one is just allowing some open channel, but supporting it all the way. And then that could probably be, the length, I think, would become a non-issue probably in that case. And another sort of more easy fix would be, or to help, is offsetting the orifice ring, shifting it up, so the initial jet starts slightly higher.
Oh, I see.
You know, like there's the hole, just shifting it up some. Mm-hmm. And then at the downstream.
So it clears the housing on the other end.
Right. And then in the end, if we had a bigger core, that would help. If we shifted the what we could lower, then that might help a little bit too in terms of the trajectory. It's a fine line, and there's also, yeah. So if we increase the orifice tube size, then we have to kind of balance that against the size of the gates and how thick they would be and that kind of thing. And then the slider traction, and I think we've talked about that, what that is. We came up with some alternative evaluation criteria, and we put it in the order of importance that we felt. And part of your homework is to give us some what you feel about these, and whether this is sufficient or whether there's additional that you'd like to add. You can read them, but it's having a clean observable passage. Somehow being able to see when there's debris and all that. However, see or feel or know that there's a problem. The fish condition after the modification, in terms of how safe is it, how healthy is it for the fish, what they have to go through. The alignment, is it within alignment with the current DSM criteria? And if we change it, then we can get it to that same criteria or something that's agreed upon. Is the technical viability, kind of like what you're talking about with the sensors and such, if it's proven technology? O&M cost, which was very important to Ben. The ease of testing, the proof of concept, the idea of perhaps, once we've decided on an alternative, seeing what it looks like in the field before doing 40 of them. Construction cost, and any other anybody would like to consider. So the homework for y'all and for us is if you could review the alternatives based on what we've shown you and provide our comments or additions or concerns in 2 weeks, Thursday.
That's one week.
I meant to give it 2 weeks.
Was that a metric 2 weeks or a standard week?
If that was July, it might make it. I'm not kidding, actually.
I only gave you 1 week.
I have no time.
I meant to
add
two.
Trevor will have to do it.
Did you send this out to us?
No.
What's that?
We will. Yeah. I mean, we want to show it to you here. Talk about some of the alternatives. This starts
a meeting every day until the end of June.
Yeah.
And all days.
Right. So, perfect. Yeah. I think if anything, if you see something, or Trevor, you see something, or we get over, you're seeing something that, I mean, gosh, why aren't you guys going down this path? Or, some of these alternatives. I mean, I think some of these alternatives we can eliminate fairly quickly before we move forward with ranking them and even pushing them forward in the report. Mm-hmm. We just kind of want proof of concept on some of these and whether or not we can move, if they even make the alternatives list.
Is it consider a criteria or something along the lines of an expected benefit? I mean, if all of your alternatives are, did they all get you to the same place?
Or is one
alternative get you here, another one gets you up here, and that sort of
thing? That's where the ranking and weighting. There's going to be a ranking, and then there'll be a weighting of the ranking. You know, what benefit is the greatest? We feel like the observable clean jet is our ultimate goal. We want to be able to have an observable clean jet again.
And the key here is to know whether or not you have it blocked.
Right.
Orifice.
So that criteria is what our number one criteria is, and what is going to probably carry the most weight. And then these other below this. Will be part of the ranking, but we feel that have less weight. But we just want your comment on that. Do you feel we're going, that's our ultimate goal?
This is good, yeah, and I don't see any issues here.
Okay. Okey-doke. I know, a lot of food for thought on this one.
Well, you know, I think just what I keep thinking is what we had before we changed it was what we were trying to get back to.
Yeah.
Without all the other bells and whistles, we did for the FGE studies. I mean, we went and we did the channel for the, well, for the, it wasn't FGE, it was a DSM. It was redoing the DSM. So we rebuilt that, we changed the channel, which we added the pipe, we put the building, all this stuff out there, redid everything. At the end of all that, we ended up with a orifice jet that we couldn't observe for debris problems like we could before. So what I said was, let's get back to that. How do we do that? And it still seems to me that that's, you know, that it's a, you ought to be able to recreate those hydraulic conditions you had before with a larger orifice. Simple. Like, to me, it's pretty simple. You know, it means coreage. Well, you can go back to that, or you can core this so that you have the same relative space around.
One way or the other should get you what you had before.
With the exception of
as far as the quality of the jet.
We've changed gate weld hydraulics since then.
Well, in conjunction
how much
with,
does that change?
In conjunction with moving those gates that are sticking too far out. That has to happen with it.
Yeah, that's right. That's it's you.
Either way, that has to happen.
You've got the ring that needs to be set in flush with the gate well. You need a core that's the same, allows the same amount of air.
You need a proportional difference between the orifice and the tube.
Right, you're getting back to those same hydraulic conditions you had, only with a larger orifice. So the same physical conditions. It seems that that's the least risky approach, even though I know it's expensive.
Well, also going back to 12-inch would not be risky.
Right. But you
except,
may
except
end up...
Except you point out more debris problems.
Well, what about the amount of flow we need in the channel?
We could... Well, we have more orifices.
We're yeah, but you changed them. Now.
Yeah, we've got... There's 28 orifices that were with the original system. We added 12. So that means we can add a whole... We can add 28 minus 12, basically, possible additional orifices.
But it's
that's
in
the rest
wrong
of the
area of the channel.
Right.
It's in 15 through 18.
Right.
Where you're reducing flow is in 11 through.
Correct. We would reduce
14.
The flow.
Right. But you have starter flow.
14.
But you have.
Yeah, which we
starter
manage
flow.
To sell.
I have to point out one thing, though, right now.
Which we manage
we're
to
not always
fish.
Using 11 through 14, both orifices.
Right.
Depends on the
four-bay. Right.
Sometimes we might be just using one in every one of them if it's a high four-bay.
Right.
And then we might be using all of them if it's a really low four, but usually it's somewhere in between. So using maybe half of them on average. So with this one, you would if you went to the 12, then you'd most likely be using all of them, the at least 11 through 14, all of the time.
This is something that we can implement pretty quickly if this is, you know, we can go back to the old conditions relatively, you know, inexpensively.
Right.
And without having to be coring down there is going to be expensive. So if we, you know, if we can meet the same hydraulic criteria in the channel.
That's
by,
the key.
By going back
right.
by well, going we, back to the
I think Karen's already done some analysis on that we can do that, right?
Yeah.
We have enough orifices that we can meet that you know flow requirement that you know, we have at the dewatering system of 470 to 500 CFS.
No, but can you meet the transport? Can you meet the transport velocity up in the channel? And the acceleration.
We can check that, but I don't think it's gonna. I don't think because we already have the added water that gives us 60 CFS right at the beginning.
And we've had problems with delivering juveniles up in that system too.
Delivering
that takes its water out from the VBS behind the VBSs,
right?
And we have now that's why we have a grizzly up in there because we've had juveniles hit on the well. We actually have a screen up in there now, don't we?
Well, we have bars that prevent like big fish from going upstream, right?
Yes.
We had a total fish screen at one time, but we were trapping some large size juveniles, and so we had to change it to more like adult pit tag or adult bar screens, kind of like configuration. But it's round bars.
It excludes just adults, not juveniles. The juveniles can go back and forth freely, and they
do. But if I recall, I mean, we maxed out that area up there. We're already at the what we set out for design in terms of velocities and transports up there was we have that now. I mean, we don't. Right. I'm not even sure we met the criteria now, especially at like low orbit. So I mean, you're talking about reducing the orifice. I'm telling you, if you go back to how that was designed in the criteria, I think you're going the wrong way. I mean, in terms of channel hydraulics.
We can check that, but what we had is the minimum velocity was right at the point where the added water came in.
Right.
There it increased, and by before
too long, the channel also gets wider.
Right, the channel's getting wider. We can analyze that and tell you what that is and tell you what the difference is.
The thing we don't want to change is hydraulics of the channel because we pretty much hit a home run there. I don't want to go back.
Yeah, I understand that. I don't know what the percent difference in flow rate is. Karen, you might.
I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Basically, it's the ratio of 12 and 5/8 squared over 12. I'm not sure, I can't do that in my head. Sorry. used to be able to, maybe. No, just kidding. But that's the ratio in flow rate you're getting. The other thing, we have a little bit of a problem right now with the water backs up in there. And so
backs up where?
You have a backwater in the collection channel. As you work your way upstream, the water gets deeper and deeper. Mm-hmm. And so you're starting to kind of block the orifices. So it actually may not.
It starts
to submerge the orifices partially. That may actually, you may find it kind of one, the reduction in flow actually offset, or the reduction in area actually offsets the fact that your orifices are partially submerged. So it may, but we can analyze it and see what the comparative difference is. I think you'd be fine in terms of criteria, but that's just an opinion.
I guess
you're just talking about opening one orifice, right? One orifice only?
They're talking about the difference between what we have now, 5/8 versus...
Going back to the 12.
Going back to 12.
12, but only one orifice per bay.
They'd be almost always two up there.
They're two orifices.
Yeah.
We'd have to run the two all
right.
the time.
Right. The other thing that can be done is we can prioritize which orifices come on first, the second orifices. Such that, if you're running a lot of flow in units,
or
you're going to be running a lot
units.
Of flow in units 18 and 1 or 11, then, those are the orifices that are always going to be on first.
Well, 11 doesn't run. We don't have a unit there.
It's coming.
Oh.
But that's the way it already is there, Steve.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, there's a program in there for, depending on your forebay, of which orifice is to operate. And it goes one per... per unit, and then 11
it just
south,
moves down sequentially.
12 south,
right.
13 it just starts at 11 and works its way down. To 14.
Right. As the
four
bay goes up and down.
Bay is.
Right.
And we can keep it that way, but if you had a situation where you knew that 18 was also running high flow, you could make that one of them that turns on earlier than
just to maintain channel flow.
Maintain channel flow, but it's a high passage unit.
And that way you get the fish out quicker.
Well, yeah. I don't know.
Let us do a little bit of the hydraulic analysis before you I don't want you to get too bad a taste in your mouth.
Yeah.
But adding additional orifices open, that ties into the benefit of trying to get fish out of the gatewell faster.
It does.
We know when you open up a second orifice, you can get fish out of there faster, and that's one of our issues, I think, that we're going to explore in the next talk. And wow, what a great segue! I know we burn up more time on the orifice work, but thanks very much, orifice team. We'll do a follow up. We'll send out this, as well as hopefully some comments back from folks if they have any. So right now we're going to transition into Randy's song and dance, the B2 FGE team. Part of this was that we sent out an alternatives report. We're trying to get to the 60% on the alternatives report. part of that was.
I'm okay with your machine almost. Not mine. Then I got too many questions. I have to decide how to think about it. Just do it right.
Okay, so this part of this part of the work was, you know, we met about 2 months ago and presented a modeling study. Randy's group.
Moving up.
Move on up.
Oh, everybody should move up here. This room is like a...
Yeah, it's like a tube. Come on up a little closer to the screen if you can.
I want to be behind Elizabeth, but not all the way behind.
Yep.
And it's dark.
Yeah, that's okay. We're all in the dark on this.
We are.
That was comforting.
So Randy can give us a while she's loading this, you can get us an update on the 60% alternative report.
I just did.
There it is.
About an hour ago.
About an hour ago.
Yeah.
Where we're at.
I think the people are still here that were there when I gave it.
Okay, good.
So I don't want to waste... I want to spend more time. I think most of the work we've done from that 30% is in the CFD modeling end.
Thank you.
And I think in the end, as we close, some of the same topics that you just discussed, Dennis, on the second orifice, and also the path forward and the evaluation ranking criteria, which I didn't write down, but I think I kind of put it in the 30% report, kind of the same discussion that we had with yours.
Same type of meeting.
Yeah, right. And we'll talk about that. Oh, and we have Tom's here, too, from the structure side to answer any questions or concerns on construction or things that we see in the gatewell that might give us some concerns when we, if we investigate or at least go forward with some of these alternatives. So.
Ready?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I wasn't here for the overview that Randy gave this morning, so.
Here.
Or was this afternoon?
This afternoon.
This afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know if I've met everybody. I know you guys. I'm Liz O'Roy. I haven't met you.
Dave Wills.
Dave Wills. Okay. Nice to
meet you. I'm Trevor.
Trevor? Hi, Trevor. I'm Liz O'Roy. We've been working on a CFD model to help us look at alternatives for B2 FGE improvement. And everybody wanted to make sure that I reminded you why we decided to pick a CFD model for this tool. We have an existing full four-bay CFD model for B2 that was developed by PNNL a couple of years ago. And so one of the reasons we chose the CFD model was because we can link it to that full four-bay model. Last year we did some model runs that showed us that some of the different four-bay configurations, whether we have the BGS corner collector and ties in or out or operating or not, can have some influence on the gatewell flows across the powerhouse. So one of the advantages of a sectional CFD model is that we can, after we choose our preferred alternatives, go back to that full four-bay model and double-check those alternatives and make sure they're going to work. The other thing is that we can put any level of detail that we want for our hydraulic features that we have in the powerhouse unit in a CFD model in different iterations. We don't have to go back and build pieces and parts physically. And then we can look at the model results in any location in the model with some of our post-processing programs, and I'll show you some of the results we've got so far. And we've been able to test a whole slew of alternatives pretty efficiently. Once we got the model built, we've spent the last, I'd say, 2 months going through and testing 7 or 8 alternatives that I'll show you some of them today. A couple of things that the model is a tool, so it's not the be-all, end-all. We have the ability in the CFD model to control the relative porosity of things that have porous plates, the STS and the VBS, but we don't have the ability in the CFD model to identify the exact porosity that we'll need if we have significant changes to the flow field around the VDS. So if an alternative shows that we'll need to do that, we would have to go to a physical model to help us make those changes.
So what I think Liz is saying is that it's a good tool to look at the
relative changes. So we can get relative changes. But if we were to actually really significantly change the flow field in front of the VBS and have to rebalance VBS porosities, we wouldn't be able to tell you, okay, you need X plate on this panel, this panel, this panel. We have a porosity parameter that we apply that affects the head loss, but doesn't directly tell us what kind of plate you would use. So when you get to design, if we need to make those changes, we would have to go to a physical model. And the other thing is that
Randy brought up the physical model. Currently, it's not accurate.
It's not even, it's not in there anymore. We did the study, and then after the study, the model was dismantled. So the evidence is gone.
So we don't have an active physical
dismantled
model.
And taken out?
Destroyed. This was over to, up in NSER or AECOM.
It's long gone.
It's long gone.
One of the other things is that if we had a wish list for the model, we would get some additional prototype data. If we were to use it as a rating tool to actually say, this is the exact gate well flow that we have with a different alternative, we'd want to get some more prototype data so that we could be sure of that. So that said, we have that existing PNNL full forebay model that shows us the flow field in the forebay with the second powerhouse, the spillway, and a truncated portion of the B1 powerhouse forebay. That model had old geometry in the B2 powerhouse units, so it didn't have some of the VBS modifications, the beam modifications that were done fairly recently, and it had a coarse grid in the powerhouse unit. So to use that as a tool for looking at FGE improvements, we needed to update a single powerhouse unit grid to put some more geometric features in and make it current. So our objectives for doing that and developing a current, updated, more detailed sectional CFD model were to update that geometry, use it to tell us what's happening out in the existing condition, our baseline conditions, and the gate wells, and then use the model to help us with the biological information that we have, identify some hydraulic metrics that we're going to use for our alternative evaluation. What do we actually want to look at so that we can post-process the model results and say, this got better or this got worse from alternative to alternative. And then using those metrics, we wanted to put some different alternatives into the model and evaluate them. So that's where we've gotten so far, and I'll step you through what we've done so far. The next thing I think is that we want to document the performance of some of the alternatives over a range of forebay configurations and powerhouse flows so that we can confirm not just in a single unit, with our here we are in unit blinders on, but look at the effects of those alternatives over the entire powerhouse to make sure that they work and do what we're expecting.
Because what the approach flows,
right.
are that the patterns are not straight approach
right.
flow patterns.
Right, we're going to make sure that they
split
of,
and, they, uh-huh. and they swirl yeah, around.
Right, sides. So what does the influence of the forebay approach flow do in each of those units, and is our alternative still applicable across the whole forebay? So some of the things that we updated, I think you guys may have seen this at our last meeting. We developed, with the help of PNNL, a new geometry for the unit, for the CFD model. It's pretty detailed, and actually the first one they sent us, I had to tell them to pare it down a bit, because it had like every little nook and cranny, and we were gonna chew up several millions and millions of grid cells defining it. So it includes the ties. You'll notice that all three of the ties are in this version. We're able to turn them on and off depending on whether we're looking at the ties out, ties in, and which bay we're in. Because some bays have them in the A bays and C bays, and some they're in the B bays.
And
some of them they're in none of the bays.
No,
the ones, right,
now.
They're not in there now. Yeah. We do have data sets, though, where the ties were in. And in that case, so you want to compare, right? We want the ability to put them in or out. Yeah. So we left it in the geometry, and we can put them in or out. The trash rack is modeled. The mouse on this doesn't want to. Here we go. The trash rack's modeled. We have an STS. You'll see we have three bays, so this is a complete powerhouse unit. The STS is modeled with its structural members, and then a two-dimensional porous baffle representing the screen. The gap closure device is included in the geometry. The beam modifications here to lower that beam. The turning vane is included, the VBS. Also, structural members of the VBS with porous baffles, and we've adjusted the porosity on those porous baffles to represent the changes in the porosity for the different panels. And then we have the gate slots are included in this model. So we also have fish orifice openings, two per bay, and the details of the emergency gate. You can see in this cutaway, you can see the structure of the emergency gate inside each bay. So it's fairly detailed. So we took this solid geometry that represents a single unit, and we brought it into STAR-CCM, our CFD modeling program, and we built a computational fluid dynamics grid inside the solid rendering of the unit. And we used polyhedral cells. I don't know if you guys have seen a grid with polyhedral cells yet. We call them polys. You've probably seen CFD model grids that are made up of hexahedral cells, they're boxes, basically six-sided cells, or trim cells, which are the box cells that have been sliced off at the outer limits of the model domain. Polyhedral cells are basically like bubbles, and so they almost end up looking like soccer balls. And so they're many-sided cells that are used to fill up the computational space and can actually give us a more efficient computation. And we can fill up the model domain more efficiently using smaller cells where we need them and larger cells where we don't need them as much, and end up with less cells overall so that our runtime isn't as long. So you can see that we use larger cells out towards the forebay, smaller cells in the gate well where we wanted to define the geometry and the flow field a little bit better. The upstream boundary is on the vertical plane at the upstream end of the model. We put a pressure boundary there, and we have a water surface boundary, and then we put flow, we specify velocities at the downstream boundary at each unit so that we can specify the fact that we have more flow generally through bay A than we do through B and C. And so we have taken that into account in the model. Once we got the model geometry and the grid set up, we had to look at what kind of data we had to calibrate and validate the model. And we had two main data sets. We had the 1 to 12 physical model that Randy mentioned earlier from ENSER. We had data for several different bay flows from the 1 to 12. And we also had some field data from the prototype for several bay flows. And it happened that we had about five different bay flows for which we had VBS normal and sweeping velocities. And so we took those data sets and compared them to similar CFD model runs so that we could look at the VBS normal and sweeping velocities, compare them, make adjustments to the porosities of the STS and the VBS, and make sure that we had those set right. So those were sort of our adjustment knobs, so that we could make sure that we got the flow through the VBS in the appropriate panels. And so some of the comparisons that we did, on the left-hand side is our sweeping velocity. This is compared, the yellow is the CFD model and the blue is the 1 to 12 model, over the lowest panel up to the top panel on the VBS. And the comparisons over here are the sweeping velocity. We consistently got higher sweeping velocities from the 1 to 12 physical model than we did from the CFD model. We figured out partway through this that the 1 to 12 model was truly a flume model. It didn't have the expansion for the gate slots. So we're looking at a narrower flow cross section. So part of that higher velocity in the 1 to 12 for the sweeping velocity is explained by the narrower cross section that they had
But the expansion for the gate slot, I mean, the gate slots are only, what, 8 inches deep and six?
The width, it's about 15-20% more area if you add that gate slot on to the cross section. So it accounts for part of it.
What slot?
The gate slot coming out where you come up where the DBS and the SDS and the turning vein are.
The guide slots.
Just upstream of
slots.
The BBS.
The guide slots.
Yeah.
They're pretty...
Well, the width of the...
They have to fit the STS frame.
That wasn't in the original model, the STS slot?
The STS slot was not in the 1 to 12. That
the
was
gate
a constant
one was there, but then
the
emergency end where it goes down.
It was a constant 20-foot bay. Yeah. And the gate slots go out to 22.9, I think.
Like
so then we did comparisons with first... normal velocities here, yellow is the CFD model, blue is the physical model, and the black and gray are the prototype. And then sweeping velocities here, we came closer to the prototype sweeping velocities, so that made us feel a bit better about that. And then there's one more comparison here for another bay flow to the prototype data. So we felt pretty good that we were getting the distribution on the VBS for the normal velocities. We varied the porosity as we went up the panels so that we could get that distribution matched pretty well. Once we had the model calibrated, we wanted to see what our baseline existing conditions looked like. So we ran the model for 12,000, 15,000, and 18,000 CFS unit flows. That's so that we can look at our low, mid, and high turbine flows. The 12,000 and 12,000 being what we call good conditions for fish. The 15,000 is, we think, probably marginal to
mid-range.
Good.
It's the mid-range.
And the 18,000 is representative of...
upper end of 1%.
Right, representative of conditions when we saw some increased injury. And so that way we can see kind of what kind of hydraulic conditions do we have during those scenarios that might look...
So these flows were kind of representative of what Lyle did his study at.
Yep.
Okay. And then from these baseline runs, we looked at what we saw and what we knew from the biology and came up with some things we wanted to use to evaluate the results of baseline and the alternatives. We wanted to look at turbulence in the gate well, the residence time, the gate well flow, and what happens to the VBS velocities. So I want to give you a quick overview of what the results look like as far as how we post-processed them so that you can see what they look like, and then we'll compare them. So one of the things we did was we took a slice through the model results of velocity magnitude, contoured the velocity magnitude. This is a slice taken right through the center line of bay A. And so you can see that we have pretty low velocity in our four-bay of our sectional model. It increases as you come through the trash rack, up the STS, there's the turning vein. We have a higher velocity through the gap closure device. Velocity distributed on the VBS and then the return back down into the intake.
Is that
yeah.
That color that you were just pointing at going up into the gate well? What, it's hard to tell what color that is. Is that getting back to blue or is that up in the upper red, what looks
here.
Like purple. No, on the previous slide.
Yeah, this is the same one, just zoomed in.
Oh, okay.
So I was going to zoom in and see if it's easier to see.
Four, isn't it?
So what are you looking at? This part here?
No, down towards the bottom there. Is that, okay, so that's getting up in the purple, it looks like, on the wall. The color, the right there, just left of your mouse.
There?
Yeah.
That's blue.
That's blue.
So that's a shadow on the back side of the turning vein.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Low velocity.
Yeah, it's a low velocity shadow on the back side of the turning vein.
The shadow goes all the way.
Yep. So this is the same plot. We just zoomed in on it so you can see a little bit better. And we'll see these again. So I just want to run through them so you can see what they look like. The other thing that we did was we wanted to identify how much turbulence there was in the gate well. So this is looking upstream. So we're sitting behind the VBS. Looking upstream at bay A, B, and C. And this is kind of a cutaway view looking upstream. And what we did was we made an isosurface. So we basically said, show me the volume of space where turbulent kinetic energy is equal to a certain value. And so that's what's plotted here in blue. And in this case, it happens to be all of the volume in space where the turbulent kinetic energy is equal to 0.25 feet squared per second squared. Okay, that might not mean anything to you, but we're going to look at the relative change in that isosurface. Okay, and so you can see that from bay A to bay B to bay C, we know that our gate well flow and our unit or bay flow in bay A is the highest, right? And so our turbulence decreases from bay A to bay B to bay C. And this is also an isosurface of the turbulent kinetic energy. This time, it's isosurfaced at 0.5, so at a higher turbulence value. And so we'd expect that the areas where it's making an isosurface would get smaller as the turbulence increases. So it's identifying some smaller areas. And so what we can do is compare these from run to run. The other thing we looked at is the normal and it's not really the swooping velocity, I need to change that. It's more of a flow pattern on the VVS. So the contoured color is the normal velocity. We're looking upstream again, same direction as the previous plot. And the contours are showing us the normal velocities. The vectors show us the flow direction. So you can see that the flow, this is bay A, flow is sweeping up and we get some recirculation in our existing condition. This is for 15,000 CFS. So we get some recirculation on either side. And what's happening is that the STS is occupying the space on either side in the gate slot. The supports, the side supports for the STS. And as the flow comes up the turning bang, on either side of the turning bang comes up and that gate slot opens back up again on either side. And we're getting some recirculation as the flow expands to occupy that space. And that's something that we didn't see in the 1 to 12 model because that model was basically a flume of a single bay. And so we would have seen a more uniform velocity profile up the gate wall.
So that's a really significant point.
Yeah,
that's what we're making sure that people understand what we're talking about is.
I let them know at the very beginning when you weren't here that.
Oh, did you say that? This is the
Yeah, this is the T. This is the. So as the STS in its frame is sitting in the slot, it's when it's down position, those guides are taking up that slot. Mm-hmm. So
this
it's not
right
so the water isn't has nowhere to go.
Oh.
Doesn't
have
to fill
in.
Right. Okay. Once it passes the turning vane, though, it's open back up. Okay, because it's down in its fixed position. So all of a sudden you have an expansion that you go back out into those slots.
And it's coming. And that velocity.
No, it's just it widens back up.
It just widens back up because see the frame sits down there. The frame is
it's narrow
at its bottom. It's in the slot.
Let's see if I can show you.
In its fixed position.
Here.
Okay.
So see the orange here?
So it's in its fixed position. Once it goes past the frame, it has room to expand up inside the wall.
The orange is the STS, and so there are the side supports for that are occupying the gate slot up to about here. So as the flow comes up here, it comes up, and the gate well widens back out to its full width, including the gate slot, once it gets above the STS side supports. Because the STS side supports are occupying that slot.
Oh, so it's only the length
up.
Of the...
Yeah, it only goes up to like
for
right
some
here.
I thought it went
no, it doesn't go all the way
up. To the top of the
once it gets to the top of the turning vane, if you ever see a turning vane sitting in the slot, once you're above the turning vane,
there's the frame.
There's no more frame.
Yeah.
So then it expands out to the full size.
Oh, okay.
Of the, you know, so all of a sudden you're going from a condensed area to all of a sudden... Boom, you got more volume.
So we see in the 1 to 12 physical model, we saw a little bit of recirculation, but most of it was happening. You guys can see my mouse, right? I'm not just talking myself. Okay. A little bit of recirculation up higher, though, in the 1 to 12 data, because they didn't have the full width of those gate slots. They didn't have the expansion there. Which is fine.
There,
that's
right.
Not what you know. They were looking at model
just a 20-foot slot all the way up. It didn't have any room to expand.
But when I look at the prototype velocity data, the normal velocity or the prototype VVS velocity data, there is a more pronounced recirculation in the prototype data than there was in the 1-12 data. So it makes us feel like this is a phenomenon that exists in the prototype. So this is a quick, let's see if this will work. It was kind of choppy when I looked at it.
Well, you're not asking my computer to do something,
oh,
are you?
Oh, really? Is it not going to do it?
Oh, it'll probably take it years.
It's going to take off. This is some string traces I did so that you can see the recirculation up here.
Oh, my gosh.
And the colors are the turbulent kinetic energy.
It's on that come network
on,
stuff.
Come on, baby.
Oh, come on.
What are you expecting a lot out of my computer?
It's all those games you have on it. That's just...
Where's that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, well, so just in case...
That's pretty awesome.
I printed it, too. These are ribbons that show how that recirculation happens. And the areas where you see something other than blue are the areas where we have the highest turbulent kinetic energy.
Can you point with your arrow where the orifices are?
The orifices are... There's one right here.
And where's it?
And that's the one that's active.
Right.
The other one is right over here.
Or the potential one. Could be right there.
Yes. Okay. So.
Can you point to the STS guide slot on there?
The STS is right here.
Yeah.
And the area where it comes up and it can expand into is.
Right there, where all the ribbons are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, next thing we're going to look at
see
is.
This computer one.
Okay. So baseline conditions still. Let's look at these quick, so you can get a quick flavor for them. I don't have any idea what time. I need to keep track of the time to start.
2:15.
So these are the same plots. So this is Bay A. We're looking at Bay A. Centerline velocities. So we slice through the centerline of Bay A. And we're looking at velocity magnitude here. All right? And this is with different unit flows and therefore different gate wall flows. Okay? 12,000 CFS, 15,000 CFS, 18,000 CFS. And so you can see that the velocities up the turning vane and up the gate well increase as we increase our unit flow. That's not so surprising. We'd expect to see that. And the velocity on the return down to the intake increases also. Let's see. If we look at our turbulent kinetic energy in the three cases, 12, 15, and 18,000 CFS, during the times when we have lower unit flow, we have, this is for the 0.25 feet squared per second squared. Lower turbulent kinetic energy, these lobes of turbulence that come up with that recirculation are smaller than they are when we're at 18,000 CFS. Is this the biggest significant issue? We don't know for sure, but we suspect that it could be an issue. These, Lori calls these the horns. The horns happen to also be in the same area where we have. This is the isosurface at a slightly higher turbulent kinetic energy. They happen to be coincident with the areas where we have the highest normal velocities. And so that may be causing, we have the highest turbulence where we have the highest normal velocity. Is that an area where we might have a potential for injury or fatigue? Maybe. It's certainly something that pops up to us when we look at these results. So, this is 12,000, 15,000, 18,000. We're just looking at Bay A again. And you can see we have the same, basically the same flow patterns in the gate well on the VBS. This is just upstream of the VBS, but an increase in the magnitude of the velocity. Yeah, go ahead.
Being a non-engineer, I guess I would have expected as the water comes in and then up the gate well, you would have had completely symmetrical flow lines all the way across.
Well, you might expect that, but you have to remember that a couple things. One is that we have different flows in each bay. Right. Bay A has about 38% of the flow for the unit. Bay B has about 34% of the flow, and Bay C has 28% of the flow for the unit. So that means that we have some asymmetry to the flow approaching each bay to begin with.
Okay.
Right? And that can set up some rotation that can cause this rotation up in the gate well to be asymmetrical.
Okay.
And that's something else that we wouldn't capture in a straight flume model.
No, we've seen this. I mean, this is not at all a surprise to me. I mean, I've seen this over and over again on the models down at Riddick.
Yeah.
The gate well models. You see this sort of flow.
I wouldn't
this elevator, we call it an elevator effect, but then you have the downdraft. And the idea is that you want to have your orifices somewhere where the fish are still coming up mm-hmm. before they right. get sucked back down to the second go-around. So this is very, very typical with those models at Erdic. I don't know this...
But it's not, it, and what NHC I think you're saying is that it's not completely symmetrical either.
Right, that's right? All. That was just the point.
And it's not, and I think that's
it's not.
You answered my question.
And it changes with unit yeah. operation, and yeah. lots of things can change.
And the other thing is that I think that the fact that there is a rotation there and the fact that it's not completely symmetrical is very true. And
it's
I
not
also
steady either.
That it's not steady. We were talking about that at our meeting last week, is that... we did a run, and I don't think I put that in this presentation, but I have it with me. We did a run where we put both orifice flows on. This is with a single orifice mm-hmm. in all these cases. And we did a run where we looked at flow through both orifices, and two of the bays flopped. So we had a very similar flow pattern, but the side with the bigger recirculation flipped.
With the orifice on?
With two orifices as opposed to one.
Odd.
So it's just a little bit of change can flip the side.
Tell me what 10 CFS.
And the other thing is that in the field data, in the prototype data, you can see that there's a tendency for the rotation to be more prevalent on one side than the other. But it's not always the same side. It's sometimes the right side, sometimes the left side.
But you can see that change. That changes even with nothing
if
else
you're
changing.
Standing there,
it's just
yeah.
unsteady.
Yeah, and so
you,
that's not surprising.
You
I would say that
watch
it's,
it. It will move.
It's that a stable condition back. In the sense that it's there. It's not
oh, yeah.
stable from
it's
side
always
to
there,
side.
But it can move around from side to side.
Yeah. And so this is a steady state run. So it will be stable
okay.
within the CFD model. So alternatives-wise, that's kind of the existing conditions and what we know about them so far. Alternatives-wise, Randy probably told you that we had the 30% report and we had identified some alternatives in the 30% that we wanted to look at. At that point, we were thinking about looking at some operational alternatives, looking at two fish orifices per bay to try to get the fish out faster, decreasing the unit flow and therefore the gate wall flow. Looking at flow control, because at the time we thought that the best thing to do would be to try to reduce the gate wall flow by several means. There's lots of ways we can do that. So we've looked at a couple of them. One is to remove the gap closure device, and the other is a flow control device on the downstream side of the flow return to the intake. We built the model grid so that we can take pieces and parts in and out. We can make them fluid cells or solid cells so they become part of the computation or they become solid structures. And so the gap closure device is built that way. So is the turning vane and these slot fillers. That's my teaser. And also the flow control device. The other thing we looked at since we looked at the baseline conditions was we decided we wanted to look at alternatives to try to streamline the flow a bit and try to reduce the turbulence up the gate well. So we've looked at, 9 or 10 alternatives. I'll show you some results of a couple of them. If you want to see more, I have them with me. Our existing conditions is on the left. And these are all for 18,000 CFS unit flow. So for the worst case. Okay, so we'll compare our baseline 18,000 CFS case to same unit flow with some change made. So existing conditions, in this plot we removed the gap closure device, and so we have less flow going up the gate well, more of it going through the gap between the STS and the beam, we reduce the flow up the gate well that way. I'll show you what that does to the other plots in a minute. In this run, we looked at putting slot fillers in. So essentially, we filled the rest of that slot in the gate well on either side, all the way up to the water surface, with a rectangular slot filler, so that we could limit the expansion in that rotation side to side. It didn't significantly change our flow patterns. Looking at this plot, it looks like it reduced the velocities in the gate well, but actually it didn't. We actually increased our gate well flow by a very small amount, maybe 10%. because we reduce the turbulence. So when we reduce the turbulence, we're reducing energy loss, and we are streamlining the flow. We actually increase the flow slightly, but it got distributed more evenly up the gate well, so the velocities look lower on the center line. And then this alternative, we looked at putting a flow control device, a sliding plate across the top of the beam. And in this version, we occluded about 25% of the cross-sectional area going down the return. And that brought the gate well flow for a unit flow of 18,000 CFS back down to the same unit flow we had for existing conditions at 15,000 CFS. A 50% occlusion with that flow control device brought us down to the same gate well flow as the 12,000 CFS unit flow, just for frame of reference. So you can see that there's slightly lower velocities than existing conditions up the gate well. It doesn't do anything for the necessarily for that rotation. Slightly reduces it. You'll see that here.
But keep in mind, we have that rotation in just about every gate slot up and down the river.
Yes.
So, and with good results, I mean, without problems. So it's just, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
That much of it? Or is it up towards the top?
It can be pretty...
Pretty intense?
Pretty long.
Here we've got the existing conditions for turbulent kinetic energy. When we look at removing the gap closure device, we don't do a whole lot to the turbulent kinetic energy. It changes a little bit. You'll see why in a minute. The slot fillers in place, we pretty much eliminate those, the horns, as Lori calls them. They're really gone by putting those slot fillers in place. And so we've pretty much eliminated the turbulence at this level in the gate well by putting those in. And then if we put a flow control device in, we're just slightly dampening that turbulent condition.
It almost look worse.
It's actually about the same. Yeah. Not the same. It's actually just a little bit less.
Yeah. What you got is a 15,000 unit flow turbulence, essentially.
Yeah, so it's slightly less. And then if we look at the difference in the normal velocity, this is our existing condition. When we take the gap closure device out, we pretty significantly change the velocity patterns on the VBS. So if we want to reduce the flow up the gate well, that might not be the way to go. We might want to use a flow control device in some other location because we end up with sending the flow up the gate well at a different angle. And it almost recirculates back down and through the gap closure device. So, slot fillers in place, you can see the green on either side is where those slot fillers are. So they go all the way up, just outside the lifting gears for the turning vanes, and then all the way up. And so we've streamlined this flow. We still have some recirculation, so it's not totally gone. And that's why I asked how much.
I think you will. It depends on your porosity, too.
Yeah. But we've got more uniform velocity up gate slot and a little bit of recirculation at the top, which we're not going to get rid of, and I'm not sure you want to. But we've reduced the turbulence a lot. And the velocity on the VBS overall is much more uniform, and we don't have these hot spots here. We have a little bit here, a little bit here. But not as intense as we do here.
The porosities that you're working with here are the porosities we have now.
We have.
So you haven't tried to balance porosity at all.
We have not made any changes to the porosity parameters. We're using the existing porosity parameters. The only change is we put the slot fillers in.
Right, so you can still go in and do some porosity control work.
Right. We could go in and change it.
Fine tune those too.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't see anything in this situation that would make me say that you would have to go in and do it.
Some sensitivity would need to be done if we detail this down in a physical model.
Yeah.
Kind of run through a whole sensitivity analysis on. Right.
And then if you put a flow control device in to try to reduce the gate well flow, you just have the same flow patterns essentially. They're just slightly lower magnitude than the existing condition. Still have the rotation. And this is another slow video. This is with the slot fillers in place. And so you'll see, maybe.
I don't have the super power.
I made a picture of it, too, just in case. because I didn't know if it was going to work. So as you can see, the fish move really fast up the... They go...
Like the ants.
Is it going?
It's kind of slow to me.
Oh, it's not going.
It's going, kind of.
So you get that... Here, Gary, that's that... There's still some recirculation, but it's happening up a lot higher.
It's kind of going
to have to have
that. You're pushing flow up, and it's got to go somewhere.
So your orifice is
kind of... But it's not happening down on the...
But if you got your orifice...
That's good.
If you got your orifice open...
They're hanging out.
Recirculations here.
That's what we've always tried to do, is get the
position of those puppies.
In that area where...
So, you know, to me, I would think that if you're going to have that recirculation, and you'd want to have it in a place where you're not... pushing a lot of flow through the BVS, and in a place where you don't have a lot of turbulence at the same time with a high normal velocity. So I don't know if that's the be all end all fixer, but it looks promising to us.
It does.
So this is just a screen capture of the same thing.
Yeah.
And you can see that this is plotted with the colors showing the turbulent kinetic energy, and we get the recirculation higher up on the BVS now. It's not as intense, and the turbulent kinetic energy isn't as high in those recirculations either.
So that blue color...
Sorry. Yes, go ahead.
The blue color was represented by the half foot per second. Am I reading that correctly?
That's turbulent kinetic energy. So I had it color those based on the turbulence that they're...
Okay, so
the streamlines are experiencing as they move through the flow.
All right.
So that's kind of a summary of the results we've gotten so far. And then I think what we're going to do next is make sure we don't have any other alternatives we want to look at, and then try to document the influence of the forebay on some of these alternatives with our full forebay model, too. Any other questions?
Well, I guess I'd like to understand a little bit of why this happened now and didn't before. And I think I know part of the answer, but... I mean, we had those slots there before we did these improvements.
Yes.
So is the fact that we've added the gap closure and the turning vane and doubled or whatever, trebled the flow into the gate well, the problem in conjunction with these slots?
Well, we added more flow up the slot. Flow equaled more fish. So you increased FGE.
Well, I'm just talking about the flow, though. Because that, and the flow of the turbulence is what is affecting the fish.
Yeah.
It didn't affect them before we
did. You know,
improvements.
I'll try. I take a stab at it.
Okay.
I think, you know, I don't know what, I don't have the flow records, but it could be that during the time we did our prototype testing to determine if we were going to go with this whole powerhouse, the unit flow might have been up in the mid 1%, maybe a little higher range, but we never did get up into the higher ranges that we did at the 2007, well, what Niles' recent turbine loadings were at the higher 1%.
When we did the prototyping in unit 17, we tested the unit around 16.
Okay. Yeah, 16, and that was 5. Pretty high.
Okay.
So the higher turbine loadings that they...
You're asking why didn't we see this before we realized?
I'm talking about not model, but actual fish.
Actual.
Because previous to the changes we did in the gate wells, the mortality rates we had, specifically the Spring Creek fish, were well below 1%.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those slots in the STS tracks were there.
Yes.
Right.
My recollection is that before we did the improvements, we had 150 something CFS going up the gate well. Is that right?
No, it was 260.
260. Okay.
Now it's 500.
Now it's 500. Okay. So there was some doubling almost.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So before the improvements, at a certain flow, mm-hmm. those slots weren't causing a problem. Now we've got twice the flow, and those slots are causing the problem. Is that the crux of this thing?
They weren't causing a problem before. That's true, and they don't another day of either.
I'm just trying to get to that basic.
If you went back to that condition that you had with 15K, you would be okay. I mean, but what I'm seeing, the only way to get there, though, is with that flow control device, be able to really shut down the amount of flow that goes up the slot.
Would that reduce FGE?
It would.
Yeah.
It would.
See, what we're trying to show on this, I mean, one of the really, what I thought was important take-homes is that you're able to put the same amount of flow on the slot,
got it.
Put in the slot fillers, and you're able to maintain your FGE,
right.
add your same amount of flow, reduce turbulence, and have a condition that you would like you would at 15.
So you're going to go forward with some evaluation of this, more detailed evaluation, possibly with a physical model of the slot fillers. It sounds like that's where you were kind of going. And it makes sense.
Yeah.
From an O&M standpoint, the valve in the back, whatever, you know, the
flow control valve.
Flow control valve will be an issue.
Yeah.
This sounds like a pretty simple type of fix.
This is
this could be an aluminum box.
Yep.
You just slide in.
Yeah, it's kind of like what we did in the corner collector. Fill in those slots right now.
Right. Yeah, with a bar across the top, or there could be two pieces you can stack them.
I think the path forward is kind of what we were kind of refine some of these alternatives.
Right.
Kind of let us go through the alternatives report stage so we actually can do make sure we thought about a lot of these and
you have them already built. You're not trying them next year?
No, I'm not. And I'm staying away from
Wait, they've got extra money, Gary.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm staying away from that now.
We spent it last meeting.
You're trying to get me to write this all up.
Yeah, we want to go through and do an evaluation, like kind of what they just saw in the Orifice, Karen's Orifice program is kind of have a list of some factors that we want to rank them, or at least look at the evaluation factors like O&M, construction costs, biological benefit type of, and kind of list it out so we give it a due process so that we have a basis for, we thought out basis for why we are selecting what we're selecting to refine to go into the physical model. It might be that in the end the slot fillers and then refine that and look at the porosities on the VBS. But
yeah,
it's kind of that type of thing. So that's kind of the path forward that we're seeing.
VBS may not change much now because your volumes are changing a lot.
The volumes increased a little bit.
They did increase slightly.
That worries me.
They increased slightly in the CFD model. I guess it's a matter of whether we think that the VBS velocities are high enough to warrant either using a flow control device in combination with slot fillers to tamp that down or rebalancing the VBS.
Right. Well, rebalancing the VBS is probably a better way to go.
It's a one-time deal.
Yeah, it's a one-time deal. You have to build something else.
It's a one-time deal, but it's not what the flow control device would do for us is
adjustable.
Would be adjustable. Mm-hmm. Right. So,
I'm
saying
one
is
how tight we can get it, and on the O&M side.
How much do you need?
How
adjustable does this need to be?
I mean, you can
wouldn't really adjust
24 units,
so
24 bays.
So, I guess what I'm saying is that the flow control device is an alternative.
Yeah.
The slot fillers are an alternative, but they could also be used.
As combinations.
I was going to say this. I mean, what you're focusing on is this turbulence up in that.
Right.
That's kind of our new assumption.
It's one of the things.
And
one of the other things that I'd like to spend a little bit more time post-processing the results to look at are residence.
Right. You still have 500 CFS worth of energy going up this thing. So that's what I'm still a little worried about. Not changing that. Changing that recirculation.
Right. Now, the one question we think originally we thought that more flow up the slot, and what we were finding, we weren't finding pinched fish. We were finding fish that were dead because of fatigue.
Yeah.
Okay? And so there's two things we thought could solve that. One is if you reduce the amount of turbulence inside of a gate well, you've got less chance of these fish being fatigued because they can manage that flow. The second thing is if you offer them a second orifice with less turbulence, they have another opportunity to get out. And we saw that benefit when Lyle ran his test.
Yeah, we did.
So I think what I'm seeing is biologically is if you can reduce that turbulence almost down to nil compared to these other alternatives,
and you offer them up a second orifice, you might be fine with the amount of flow, and you're not affecting FGE. But those are
the second orifice involves getting a smaller diameter ring.
Well, there's alternatives. You could put two orifices in your units that pass the bulk of the fish. You could, you know, you don't have to put two orifices in every unit. I mean, there's different combinations of things you could do.
But then again, you have the potential. You know, if you're just going to selectively say 11 and 13, I don't think it's a good way to go to limit yourself on just saying 11 through 13 and 15 through 17, just because right now we're getting a bulk of the fish and put two orifices in there. You'd want to put orifices in every one of them.
I agree with that.
So that gives you the flexibility,
sure,
and that opens it up.
I agree with part of what you said, Randy. I'm not sure about the other part, though, because I don't want to change the channel.
Yeah.
So how do we get away from
that? That's the key, is that the second orifice has an inherent channel effect.
You follow that all the way down
and
to the screen.
And hydraulically, the only way, one way, you know, if you can't modify the criteria on the dewatering screens to what you guys were talking about earlier, and kind of applies to our project too, you know, the fry to the fingerling criteria during certain season, parts of the season, then, you know, then you're into a very extensive modification to the DSM, which probably would in turn be size larger. And at this point, I don't think there's any real estate in that building to put anything larger except
really
outside.
Yeah.
So you see, and that to me is not only the orifice. Yeah, you can put an orifice in, but think in the long term part and your DSM and how that's going to handle that extra water, and of course that even in the DSM itself, how that you have a good. I think you have a good DSM in terms of survival now. How is that going to affect the DSM efficiency, or
we know fish move about particle travel time through that DSM.
Yeah.
We don't want to screw that up.
Right. So I'm not trying to say the second orifice is not something I don't want to do, but I just got to realize that if I'm looking at it and saying, if it works, what are we intending to do?
Yeah, we'll chase this problem all the way down to the end of the screen.
And that's what it potentially can do. So it's not more than the orifice itself might cost $1 million to do.
Right.
But then you're into a $15-20 million
modeling, because you've got to
a modification to your system.
Yeah, I don't want to do that because we have a system that works good.
So I got to look at that.
The orifice is down, it works good. It's just the orifice is up.
So there's, you know,
but trying this,
there's other options.
Idea.
All you do is put in fillers.
In the river, that's an easy thing to try.
Yeah, it is.
We could go out and try it and see what we get. Do another, you know, Gilbert tribe study where you compare things and see what you get. Maybe that fixes it.
Well, if I understand this right, you're effectively reducing the volume of the gate well by putting these fillers in. But you've got the same amount of flow coming in.
15 inches, you said?
It's bigger than that.
The frame itself might be 18.
Oh, okay.
Wide.
Well,
it's what you're changing. I mean, it's got a chance to expand a bit, and that creates turbulence.
Right. Well, it can't expand right away to fill that space.
Right.
And so it expands when it can, and the rest is...
But it's the expansion that's causing the turbulence.
So
you're taking that expansion
away.
So if you
don't give it the space to expand into, it's going to just...
It's
going to
go...
So you've got the same amount of water coming in.
Yes.
Does that make... You got the same amount of water coming in. Does that raise the level of the gate well?
No, the VBS
it's going to shoot off the top of the dam.
Will increase.
Well, I'm not worried about that. Okay, so it's
no,
not
the
gonna,
VBS flow will increase slightly.
Okay. The VBS flow.
So is that going to be a problem?
But it'll balance.
Well, eventually you're going to push back. I mean, it'll be like a valve. You're going to valve it.
Your pressure will fall.
The VBS flow will increase slightly, but in the CFD model, the balance of the flow through the VBS is actually more uniform than it is in the existing condition, because you don't have the hot spots that you get on this recirculation. You get a more uniform flow through the VBS.
Okay. So the question would be, is faster uniforms go better or go better than slower, more
turbulent? Well, it's not necessarily slower everywhere. It's also got the existing condition has some hotter.
Yeah, you're getting some hotter spots.
Where it's also the most turbulent. And so that's where the.
But I would say on average,
you're getting it more uniform.
More uniform, but on average, the flow would be a little faster.
It would be slightly
faster. Because there's less volume.
Less volume. And we're getting more flow, a little bit more flow, because the efficiency, the turbulence, reducing the turbulence gives it more efficient flow.
Thank you.
You're getting more, a little more. I think
approaching the VBS, balancing the flows to the VBS would be the
best
step.
Would become impinged with that slot fillers in. Extra flow.
Rather than going with a flow control device, you might be able to go with balancing the flow on the VBSs, or even having a porosity control device on the back side, so you have a double VBS slot.
We talked about having louvers on the back, or using different porosity plate, or the way you manage the flow through the VBS. You could do it any number of ways. We wanted to, I think you want to do it in a way that's not going to affect the flow field here. But
on the screen.
Yeah, significantly. Down here significantly, and up on the screen. So doing it on the backside somewhere, whether it's a porosity plate or a flow sliding plate or louvers or something.
Something to balance and to maybe back off the flow a little bit.
There's porosity plate. So there's wedge wire screen, and then there's porosity. And then inside of that, there's a big
porosity control panel.
Control panels.
Drilled holes through a plate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
it may be that a more streamlined, more uniform velocity would improve things enough that we wouldn't have.
Right, you may not. Well, that's why testing it in the prototype.
So it could be a stepwise.
This
we
is not a dangerous test, so I would suggest doing this as soon as possible. Really, you know, I mean, you can test it and see what you get. This is a simple test. Mm-hmm. Sort of thing we've done over and over.
It's a simple test once you build the things.
Well, I mean, it's just a box.
There's two
boxes.
Yeah,
you know, aluminum.
What would the dimensions be?
Those bumpers from the
tubes?
Yeah.
Well, you fill in, you know, it's about 18 inches deep.
That's
what? What's this, 30 inches?
30, it might be, it might
by
be 24.
What, 60 feet tall?
Yeah, 60 feet.
Yeah. How do you use it?
You don't even have to, you don't have to go up to the water.
You can't go to Home Depot and pick
those up. No. But Oregon Ironworks can, you know, weld those tubes together and
steel. I mean, the weight's the issue.
With the gantry and pick with the tie crane, and you can stick a.
I kind of see
it.
I
have
as
all
a
sorts of cross members supporting it, though.
Yeah, you might. You're gonna have to.
The box itself would
Wouldn't it be three pieces of steel welded together?
Make sure that box stays in there.
Stays in. Yeah, you wouldn't want it to
float,
right? And vibrate and do all kinds of weird things.
Right.
I like the inflatable one.
Or have the bottom fall out. Don't rely on the tie crane, though.
Oh, it's fine.
Yeah. Wait, the wind is too strong.
Yeah, no.
Or the gantry. Or the already crane.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
it might have to be in pieces, too.
We might not have a two-piece pick.
Oh, you've got to be careful because you want to make sure they seal and you don't get some sort of flow forcing friction between there lost and back.
Banging around or something.
And you have to have a tight seal on the sides of them, too.
Yep. It'll be if you have ever been to the corner collector, we've done that with that slot too. So it'll be kind of the same.
That's not that tight of seal. No, it's there. It's just in there. It's filler.
It's just a filler, keeping that water from expanding. And
you just don't want the
big seals in there enough to where fish can't squeeze in.
Some rubber
keep
seals.
Them from
rubber
squeezing.
Flaps.
Yeah. Anyway. Any other questions on this?
I kind of
slammed
through it.
No, I think it's good. I think the other thing we were trying to do, Gary, is
they're building.
I know the one other thing that the team wanted to do is we also wanted to continue down the path of doing anything we can to not have to, we tried to, you know, limit unit operation, trying to
not, you know, wedge ourselves into a unit operation where we limit the queue on the on the unit. And the other thing is to that we know when we have higher flows, we have better FGE. So those are kind of things that through the developmental process, we tried to continue to have alternatives that don't limit unit operation and don't affect FGE.
So, that's what's, I mean, if we have to, that would affect FGE, you know, some amount if we had to.
Right.
It's just, we gained a bunch, we may have to give some of that back to, to keep efficient.
Right.
Yeah, as far as the second orifice is concerned, you know, you did do some runs on that, so we might want to, we're planning to document this in a draft report. We're calling it a 60% report, but I don't know what it really is. But, you know,
60%.
What would it take? Yeah, you could put the fillers in there, or you could, once the STS deploys, you can shave.
Yeah,
It's filling
maybe,
the slot.
Maybe
you can shape those back.
You shape it, fill
you can
it
actually
or,
shape the supports of the STS?
Yeah, there's a frame that it's sitting on.
So that doesn't expand?
Begins the expansion. It's slowly expansion.
And we wondered about that, but we didn't have the structural in the room.
Or they could go on top of it or something like that.
Maybe
you
know, an add-on to their STS frame.
Yeah. And so far
that would give you more volume because I think the thing that hit me is we probably get more flow up there and less volume.
Yes.
It's not changing the volume of the area of the VBS though, right? Because what we're talking about
true.
Filling.
No, that's true, but the volume of the gatewell does become less.
More flow, less volume.
But we're not changing the frontal area of the VBS.
I didn't say you were. I'm just saying that volume that has to absorb that energy is becoming less.
It is.
So
you've got a smaller gatewell.
Don't
squeeze it out. Yeah.
So can we do something to the STS frame?
Can you do something either
the
to
top portion
to
of
the tail
frame,
ends of the STS frame?
That could be a well, and then that would give you the same effect.
Can we redo those to guide that flow and allow it to expand?
That's the model
question
right there.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly we can put any of those things in the CFD model.
That would make it.
Or do we do something on the bat wing?
On the what?
On the turning
thing.
That
would, again, try to redirect flow into an expansion.
Mm-hmm. You have to have some off the bottom to make sure you're not slamming them in somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. So far what we did was we said, well, let's just go with the
slot
first fix to see if it'll see what it does, and that's the top to bottom slot filler. And we've talked a little bit about whether we could do a smaller shaping. Mm-hmm.
I think you're on the right track. It's just a matter of
we certainly could.
So doability, you know, constructability,
operability. Yeah, that's kind of what. Well, okay.
Your BICO.
Another dumb asking question here.
It's just a dumb ass question.
It's a dumb ass question.
Dumb asking.
So when they have to clean the screens, then they'll have to pull these slot fillers first.
No.
No.
They're not. They're in a different guide.
Different slot.
And they're different guide.
Oh,
the smaller.
The
little.
Yeah.
They're little.
Okay.
You know,
the VBSs
about
are okay.
About that deep.
They're about 6 inches. You know.
Yeah. Okay.
Four
they have
like
their
that.
Own dedicated slot.
But when they go to pull out the STSs, you have
they
to
will have
the STS
yeah.
slot.
But see, the STSs don't come up. We don't even have to pull them up for inspection.
Once a year, usually.
Unless you get high flows.
Yeah. That's
what. What does your camera frame go down on?
What does the camera frame go down on?
Yeah. Does
I
go
think
on
that
those
goes
guides.
In the gatewell slots.
It goes on the slot fillers.
Yeah.
Well, that's wrong.
Yeah.
They won't make it. We'll make it mounted in the SDS, I mean, VBS slots. Oh, no, those are full, too.
Yeah.
Well, you might have to redirect. I mean, it might be a wheel guide system.
Yeah, that like, just runs down the wheel. Yeah, like.
Runs down and contacts all four corners of the,
so
the gate slot.
The true square gate slots.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
how true and how square
are they?
Oh, your gatewell dip basket will be all screwed up. I'll have to rebuild that.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, you can put the fillers
sitting up on the deck,
or you can
right
look and try to expand the flow. And I don't know at that velocity when that hits that, how well you could expand it.
I don't know. It's how far do we take that?
Well, it's a matter of whether we could fill. You're talking about just sort of. Filling gradually.
I'm talking, can you start down here and fill here, or, I mean, the top of your turning vein is somewhere in here. Can we can we do a combination that spreads that flow up?
I had wondered whether we could round the top edges of the STS support and anything we could do to smooth things in there.
To get that expansion to occur.
If that starts promising.
Yeah, if that's something that
I think we could definitely look into the smoothest way to do it. When we were talking about it, we didn't have Tom.
I suspect it's going to be a long transition.
Yeah, maybe as long as
as your gate's not. I mean, if you look at it in terms of what.
How deep is that slot?
Oh, it's just like foot and a half.
It's 18 inches.
So you go 10 times that.
The width, the depth is.
If you look at it, just the typical expansion, hydraulic expansion criteria.
It's like 1 on 8.
1 on 8, so you 8 times 1.5, so you're up into 12 feet.
Yeah.
Which is much less than 60.
Yeah, better.
Save
your
little
steel. But I mean, something that you could maybe test this year is, you build some kind of filler, and you physically
test the concept.
You could go out and physically. We could P&L could go down there and take measurements again to see would that be beneficial to have them come out? Would you put slot fillers in?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
So you take new velocity measurements.
Yes.
And then you could even run a run a fish test.
Well, I think the key is a fish test.
Yes.
I think they
I just didn't want to sound like fish biologists.
That's the proof.
I think you do fish test and you get physical data. Mm-hmm. And then we can compare the physical data.
That's if
you get all that extra money, get these things, get it built before next year and we'll test it with Brad.
We'll take it back to our project manager.
He left and he told him the money.
Brad's test next year.
The team, we'll hear from you. Yeah. I mean, where are we all in our our alternative process? We don't want to move outside of that and spin too fast.
Right. And as far as what our alternatives are there some that can be,
we want to know if some of them can be fast-tracked.
You don't know what the problem is. Yeah. I mean, we know that if we back off a gate volume, goes away.
Yeah.
But we don't know exactly if it's this or if it's just the actual sheer volume flow going up and something that we're not anticipating. We're all thinking, it's got to be that. But it may not.
Well, one thing that leads me to believe that it's not flow is when we have high flow, we have high issue. When we back off on flow, we don't have an issue. So.
Yeah, but if you
back up on flow, you back off on turbulence.
And gate well. Flow.
What? On energy.
Yes.
You still have a lot of turbulence in there. We still have the same thing.
Yeah, you still have that, but
we
don't
have that in other projects too, with higher flows. And that's still there. So all I'm saying is that you need to test.
Yeah.
You don't know what the answer is, but you have an idea.
No.
I would test it.
Test it,
see if it works. If it gets the problem, we're done.
What hurts us here is that we don't have that, we have that small, even though we dropped it 6 foot on that beam, we still are undersized on the area.
On that's area probably the BBS.
Probably, if you're thinking about it, that's probably a major impact on.
That's what concerns me.
On the
rainfall. Let me look at the BBS size on this. If I could get you down to Mississippi, I could show you.
Okay.
But if you walk over, and Trevor knows this, because we looked at it just the other day, you go out, you look at the two sectional models we have for the turbines, the two turbine models, you can look at the gate, it's all plexiglass, and it shows everything's in there, modeled. You can look at the slot for the VBS and the second powerhouse, and the first powerhouse slot sitting right over here. The first powerhouse slot goes from the bottom of the gate well to the top of the gate well, the whole thing. You look at the second powerhouse, and it's just this little window.
Mm-hmm.
That's the window for the VBS.
Mm,
it's very different.
So the screen area.
Much smaller area.
That you have.
And we even opened it. It was tiny.
We dropped it 6 feet, and it's still, we improved the velocity distributions and the numbers.
As much as we could without cutting the damage.
And structurally, we couldn't go any deeper, or we can't take anything up higher.
It's a little hole instead of this great
ceiling.
Big
so,
full step slot. Wow.
Yeah, so that's kind of one of our negatives that's kind of killing us in a way, too.
Okay.
That's why probably you say you don't see it at other projects. You do.
I'm going to talk to Howard. Got to get Dave down to Mississippi model.
That's true. We need Dave down to Mississippi.
Just say
turbine model lamprey. And
lamprey.
Lamprey. Okay.
So
last week was lamprey.
Yeah. So we're going to move forward with the
documenting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you've got comments on. I think
I wouldn't waste a lot of time. Documenting lots of different alternatives.
Well, I mean, that's what we'll take back to the team, yeah. Is you know, comments back on what we heard here today, and then create a path forward. Mm-hmm. Whether that path forward involves trying certain alternatives in FY12,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
So
when's this report? When's this is 60%? When's this come out?
It's supposed to come out yesterday.
Yeah.
Probably last Friday.
You want comments on it?
May 31st.
If you can comment
yesterday. Literally yesterday.
Yeah.
Comments were due yesterday?
No, yeah. Oh, that report. But
comments are due in 2 weeks.
Tomorrow. Yeah.
Thank you.
Comments are due a week after the report should have been out.
Yeah.
John
Richard.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll take,
take it back and then we'll bring a schedule.
Yeah, we haven't changed much. I think we're just on our way of doing what we're still doing, but then taking comments.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Educational.
Thank you.
Yeah, interesting.
Hey, good stuff.
Yeah.
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 A little bit of a twist there from where I thought you were going to go.
Yeah.
Well,
okay. I like twists.
I mean, our whole concept is we've been thinking that it's the flow stupid.
So, right, it's the flow stupid, but maybe not.
I don't know. I'm not so convinced, yeah. But I'd like to test it. Yeah. It may be the turbulent stupid.
See, the thing is that we might have the turbulence already at other projects, but we have more volume and space.
This may give us actually a better condition than we have in any other project.
So maybe you go to another project. Slap fillers on everything.
There you go. Walla walla, sell walla walla on it. I'll see you over. Oh, you're headed home.
Yeah. Running at 12:15.
It's probably that.
Is it because of the
okay, see you. Thanks. Okay, just take care.
See you later.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I mean, we've got a table that shows pre-turning bay, and then there's post-turning bay.
Okay, I guess that's what I was looking for, is to plug these numbers in here.
Okay.
And later. And the point I was trying to make before was, for the change,
probably see it tomorrow.
At these operations,
priority,
whatever the flow was of the gate well,
was maximum like
240 with those slots.
Now the office out
right.
There.
Right.
Because
we
didn't have
no, I'm doing
all
a
lot the
of
other pieces that increase the flow.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
It was fine, but your FTE was better. But now that you've increased the velocity, you've increased the queue.
Yeah,
I'm not even worried about that.
Sounds good.
See you guys. Yeah.
But now that you've doubled the flow of the gate well,
yes.
Hydraulics involved with these slots are what's, we think, causing the problem.
Something is causing the problem. Though we
yeah.
suspect that it might
because
be.
Because when we throttle back down mm-hmm. to this level,
yeah,
we're not seeing the problem.
We
goes
still
away.
See that recirculation at 12,000.
But we're not seeing the fish damage.
Right.
So
we
I guess
still
what
see
I'm
that recirculation. It's whether there's some
threshold
in there.
Okay.
Where the turbulence is not at a level where the fish are significantly right. affected by it.
So I guess
that information, you know, we're on the screen. We don't know what that
so
means.
So can you have a series of